All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the September 8th, 2014 regular meeting. We'll now come to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, great. Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mrs. Wilkinson, present. Mr. Alger?
Here.
Mr. Bochensky?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Kenmore?
Here. All right, we start the evening with some recognition. Paul, you want to lead us through that?
I will. It is my great honor and privilege to introduce everybody to Patty Hartnaus, who is an author of two books, the first series being The Belgian Boys, which was a finalist for the National Children's Literature Award. Her newest book, My Sometimes Pal, has also been recognized as a finalist for this same award. I just wanted to say thank you for working with our students for the past 35 years. It's almost 35 and a half years because you student taught at Ben Franklin, and then for the next 35 years at Lincoln. That is an amazing gift that you keep giving to our community. So thank you for everything that you do on a professional level for us, but then also in your literature and your writing. It is an absolute joy. I read your first book that you gave me a copy of, so I appreciate it. But with that, I want to hand it over to you to kind of talk to us a little bit about the award and your writing.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here. This is a picture of Bellwood School. It's a unique limestone school that's in the hills of Galena. If you've ever been out to that part of the Illinois, very unique. And this is our little Peter McDougall. We have to speak with the magic sun. Coming up through the Well, I humbly thank you, Dr. Gordon, and you members of the Board of Education and Administration and CSO for the recognition of my sometimes pal as being one of the top finalists in the Clifford Award. This is an honor for me, especially since my sometimes pal was judged by principals, educators, and well-known authors such as Dean Marzullo from the High Five Series, which I was very excited. Being an educator and District 41 for 35 years and on the bully task force a few years ago, I've always been aware of the bully issues that our children encounter each day. Many children are taunted by bullies, and some are the bullies. But that is where the Belden Boys series comes into play. It all started with a master class that I was taking at NIU, and it was an assignment that was asking the sisters to find an activity that would benefit children in the outdoors. So I headed to the Mississippi Valley area going out.
She keeps telling me it looks totally different than anything around here.
And I was able to restore a forgotten one-room schoolhouse built, as I said, in 1859, called Belden School. To tell you about the story's beginning is very important and very unique, quite unique. It began when I met a gentleman farmer with a stockman named Bob. Bob discovered old Belden School journals from 1871 in a dumpster. And from these journals, I was able to read between the lines and gather information. And then I wrote some proposals and made a mock structure of the schoolhouse, and I presented it to those who would listen why this school should be restored. And I was able to interview and gather stories from the elderly people who were still living at the time and attended Elder School before it closed to consolidation in 1943. And digging for artifacts, oh, I can't tell you about that, along the creek where Ben is coming from, was invaluable. And then with a committee, along with a committee of very dedicated people, the restored Belden School was opened as a working and living museum 5 years ago. Well, what about those stories from the elderly? The stories about walking to school miles and miles through the hills and the valleys, leading to refuge for fear of being bitten by snakes. Or that Sears Roebuck essay contest that might bring sheep to your farm if you wrote a convincing all of these stories needed to be told to be honored by a better audience than our just 41 children. So we add a little fiction, create two characters, Peter and Frankie, who befriend each other in 1890. We add some tension with similar daily issues of children face today, using the real Belden School as a setting, and you have then the birth of the Belden Boy series. Starting with the first book, Belden Boy, which is right here, The Adventures of Peter McDougal, the series gives to our present day students some message that bullying is the same story, same pranks, but it's a different text. The book you have in front of you is right now the second book in the series by Sometimes Pal. And the title says it all. As Frankie, the bully, is Peter's pal, but only when he wants to be, or if he wants something from Peter. Children of all ages can relate and understand the ups and downs of friendship between the two boys. It is how the characters resolve their differences that is the lesson for students today in school. It's tied to the Common Core state standards. Yes, it is. You'd be proud of that, wouldn't you? And the series has lesson plans for teachers and parents. Belden School is truly a working museum, and it works in tandem with the Belden Boys series. And students for the past 5 years, we're going on 6 years now, from District 41, attend a morning of lessons in the Wonder School Hub each May after our auction, and with me as their school alum. This past summer, though, for the first time, I asked two of my Level 3 literacy colleagues to come with me to Belden School to help me conduct a writing camp, and we did. Each of the 12 students wrote and illustrated for 3 days, and in the end, they created their own art center book. Just this one assignment that I was given at MMU, it is truly the gift that keeps on giving. From book series to writing camp, it's been an incredible journey, not only for me, but more importantly for the students. Soon there will be another book added to the series, but this one's going to have a twist. This time, it will be from the perspective of Bully Frank, as he struggles to try to understand why everyone, including Peter, thinks he's a bully. So I thank you again for this honor, and I also welcome you to come to Galena and visit Belden School as my guest. May is a beautiful time to join us, the District 41 students and colleagues at Belden School in the Woods of Galena. Thank you, and I hope you will be there.
Absolutely. Have a great night.
I was telling Karen, she came in, that I've been holding on to this news article from July, which is the story about your summer. So I'll have you autograph it later. I did autograph the book, so thank you.
Thank you very much.
You did.
Hey. We may have to give her
you
back.
You
asked. Yeah. Go to page.
Oh, she got an autograph.
Love it. Love it.
No, did I miss a note?
Yeah.
She knew I had the article,
though. Wow.
Level 3 of literacy.
You really got to have an autograph.
Ooh, and red.
I like the red.
I've never done the red. That's great.
Pat, yeah, when do you find out whether or not you'll be winning the award this year?
Yes, October 1st.
Keep going. October 1st.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is awesome. Take it from Patrick. Thank you. Congratulations. Like a rock star.
Oh, man.
Can you share a little bit the process that you go through?
The process?
Yeah.
The process just sitting and having fun writing. And I tell my children in my literacy class, and I said, you know, writing, your character's stuck. They're just in motion, just like this. They're waiting for you to come back and give them life. So we've only been 3 weeks into school, and I already have students that are, that think, and they think they are, which is great, writing a book. So you have to backtrack a little bit and get back to some short stories. But the process itself is it's difficult. It's the Clip Award that I was nominated for is an award that's for independent publishing. And independent publishing is a very expensive process. And so I'm going to go ahead and do the third book and put it out there. Hope some publishers will take it, maybe take the whole series and revamp it. So that is my hope. I do have a fourth book out there as well that's a story about a Lincoln family's dog who got lost, which got lost in Galena. And so I tried to write somewhat of an interesting ending because we really know what happened to the dog, but we don't have the children to cry.
So went to a farm.
A lot
of farms.
So that's out there. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. But it is an expensive process.
It sounds like it. Betty, thank you again.
Thank you so much.
And you're a great role model for our students.
Okay, so I believe we move to public participation before the closed session. Is that right?
Yeah, I just want to address a few items that came up last week or in previous board meetings, I should say. Mr. Cooper, you've commented on previous occasions that you do not believe the board is following through with the actions it took on June 10th of 2013 board meeting regarding the addition of two assistant principals at the elementary schools. As you suggested, I reviewed the audio tape, and I know a few other board members have as well. And I believe the board is following through with the actions that were taken that evening. The conversation was focused on the administration's priorities, certain priorities taking precedent over others. The board asked Dr. Reebok where the money for these positions would come from, and she said she would reprioritize items on the budget that would allow for the positions to be cost neutral. During the board conversation, Mr. Escalante speaks about priorities, that it's critical to have priorities when setting the budget. And he's saying, let's make it a priority. If you believe the assistant principals are our priority, let's make it a priority, but make it cost neutral. Now, perhaps the word subtraction in the motion was not the best choice of words. However, I do believe that Dr. Reebok and I have followed the intent of what the board was trying to accomplish on that evening. And more importantly, the board agrees with these actions that we've taken. Mrs. Clark, you sent the board and me.
Do you want me to add to that? Or?
Oh, sorry. I was just going.
All right. Paul and I spoke because I did listen to the tape probably about three or four times. And, I think the first 9 minutes or so of the conversation, we were looking at how do we make this, the term net-net, zero-sum game was the intent and what we used a lot in terms of the conversation. Mr. Cooper is a businessman, so, when he runs a business and when we pass a motion, has the word subtraction in it, which that came into the conversation. Sam brought that into the conversation when we put the motion together. And I know that Patrick and I both brought up this concept of, the difficulty of the way the process works and, how you would do subtraction given the timing. And I think Patrick called it the kludgy process. So I agree with Paul. That was not the right word to use, especially for, people that like you that run a business and, and aren't necessarily tied up in some of the administrative financial things that we do. And that was the wrong choice of words. And then it's sort of contradictory because we say, in the motion, we say a subtraction that is net-net. So in some respects, we're sort of, not really using the right terminology. So I could understand why you would feel that way. And I took that point of view, and I just kept going through the tape. And we said net-net so many times. We said zero-sum game so many times. And that was truly the intent of what we were trying to do, although I do feel that we didn't word it properly. So for me, the lesson learned, I think it's really the only motion, maybe we've done two, where we changed it on the fly like that. And I think you know, Sam asked Patrick, who's on the Finance Committee, is this the right words? And we all said it was, but in reality, it's not what the intent of the conversation was. So when we change something like that on the fly, I think we either have to decide that we're going to wait till the next meeting until the words are clearly articulated and there's no confusion, or at least make a comment that says we need to review that to make it appropriate. So,
perfect.
So that's just a summary of the way I interpreted the tape.
Thank you.
Mrs. Clark, you sent the board and me a number of questions regarding Think Tank and how the board and administration are monitoring these initiatives. I'll be addressing those questions next board meeting at the September 22nd one, where we will discuss the assessment tools. We'll be looking at the map, the ISAT data. I'll also discuss the professional development that will be in place for our level two teachers for implementation for the following year, and then I will continue to give the board and the community periodic updates throughout the year on the initiatives that were out there. Mrs. Rojas brought up an issue regarding math menus that has come up on a number of occasions. Oh, I apologize, board. Did anybody else?
Well, I just think part of...
I just keep going.
Yeah, part of Mrs. Clark's question was our role in this, and I think, you know, for me, this goes back, and I said this publicly before, this goes back to when we passed Think Tank, we said that we would be monitoring an update, and we acknowledge we fell behind in that. So our role will be to ensure that, you know, it's on the agenda now. We will have some periodic updates, and it's our role as a board to make sure that we do have a process that will allow us to understand, you know, the pros and cons of what we're doing. So that is part of our role. That was part of your questions.
No, just briefly, the other piece of that is in all goals, there are one of the goals is to codify some of the survey information and kind of where we're moving, and also be keeping us updated, which is what we're going to be doing on the 22nd. Then we have the State of the District today, which is new this year, which I think will be also really helpful.
And we do plan to do town hall meetings and other community engagement opportunities that will go beyond just a board meeting. Mrs. Rojas expressed a concern regarding our math menus. I've been very clear with our educators throughout the district that differentiation's the piece that I'm looking for, that I want to see differentiated instruction happening in all classrooms throughout our district. Math menus is one instructional strategy to be able to meet that outcome. Differentiation includes small group, large group, but teachers make those decisions about how they're going to differentiate. Math menu is not something that I have said you must, you shall, you will, nor have our principals. It is a choice of educators as professionals to make those decisions. And I honor them by making those selections. Math menus are grounded in the standards, use formative assessments to drive student learning. It's about giving our students the learning and support they need. And that's throughout the whole differentiated approach. Nope.
There was one email, because we reached out to Paul on this because I wanted to make sure I understood this. And Linda, you sent an email that Paul was able to forward to us where you talked about the math venues. And I did talk to a couple of parents in classrooms that I had gone to visit last springtime, because I went around the district and was able just to do some observations. A few other board members were too. And the way that one of the teachers explained it to me or expressed it to me, I thought was good. And she said, in some of the work you do, which is project management, you have different toolkits. You might use a stakeholder analysis. You might use my chart of work breakdown structure. You might use some other tools. She said, does everybody in your team use that? She said, no. Sometimes I use the tool. Sometimes they don't. She said, it's the same for me. I'm using it. And she was using the example, just before us, Glenn, of a teacher coming in to observe her with the menu so that she could figure out how to make it work in part in her room. Didn't do the whole thing, but took pieces of it. And so I think that helped me. And in your email, too, Linda, you clarified is that what Paul just said, which is the instruction is targeted to the needs of students rather than to the overall classroom as a whole. The classroom as a whole will be have student needs met. How we do that to Erica or Joe or Catherine or whomever has to be left up to Pam and the teachers. So that was helpful for me also.
Thank you. And then there was a conversation by, or a concern brought forward by Mrs. Hopper at our last board meeting regarding a chair, and she's greatly disappointed that the correct amount of chairs were not available on the first day of school. Following that meeting, I met with a parent, talked to her, discussed the concern in greater detail. Following that meeting, I met with Linda. I met with the teacher to get greater clarity on this, and the facts are that there were enough chairs, there were enough desks, there were enough tables in that classroom for the 26 students. I did speak with Mrs. Hopper on the phone on Friday to talk through that, the remaining issues that were there, but there were enough chairs and desks in that classroom.
I followed up on that as well, and I did talk to the teacher. I wasn't there, but the teacher felt that there were plenty of chairs and desks for the kids. In fact, said that the teacher said that he or she had to put a table away after the class because there was no need for it. I think I did try to reach out to the parent as well, but was not able to make contact. And I think, you know, a couple things. When public participation, when we get something and, you know, to some extent we're a little blindsided by it and we don't really have the facts, you know, we don't really comment. We don't comment when it comes to specific students or teachers either. In hindsight, it probably would have been good to say, hey, you know, if that really happened, you know, we'll deal with it. And we did. We did right after the meeting. We went to her, but just kind of caught by surprise that something like that would happen. I think part of the other concept here is, I guess, with and I learned it for the first time, too, but with this 21st century learning, there is different furniture in the classrooms. So 21st century furniture doesn't necessarily mean you get a desk in the traditional sense. You may be at a table with a pull-out drawer, and there are also tables without drawers. So the way this teacher explained it on the first day, everyone just kind of comes in and sits in, and he or she doesn't really distribute the kids, just kind of let them sit with someone maybe they know and get comfortable. And it's possible that a child wanted a traditional desk and chair concept versus what they had, and maybe they were uncomfortable with that. I know when I spoke with the teacher, this person seemed like someone that would do almost anything for a student. So, it's just a lesson, I think, in our furniture and what it means to have a desk, I guess, could be a part of it. So that's my take on that.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So that was our first round. And now we move to our initial public participation, and I think we have a slide there for the initial public participation as we learn this process. That's the end one. So non-agenda items. So today's agenda items are around the construction, the FGM contract renewal, the bid results for Forest Glen and Churchill, and then board meeting agendas, protocols, and time frame. That's what we'll be talking about today. So this initial public participation would not be relative to those topics. Please respect each other. No personal attacks. Keep your comments to 3 minutes, and we're going to implement a little clock here on the screen so you guys can see the 3 minutes. It just feels awkward interrupting and telling everybody, you know, your time. So hopefully you can monitor yourself. Designate a speaker if possible. Maureen will capture the items to be addressed, and then as a board we may decide to commit or not commit to certain inquiries and follow up at the next meeting. So Maureen, anybody that wants to speak tonight? Okay. And Mr. Cooper, for your convenience, there's a clock there so that you can monitor your time. Thank you, sir.
Okay, I would like to say first I appreciate you for having me on the process.
Oh, right.
So I appreciate the responses getting here. I did say on the mail, the first agree with your interpretation, it's your interpretation. So I guess where I'll leave it is this. If we're going to do a net debt every year, I would hope that that doesn't fall off somewhere down the road, like in another year or two, we'll be forget. But my bigger problem would be if we continue to find $100,000 sitting in a pocket somewhere, I think that becomes a budget concern for me that we're budgeting way too much money to get people utilized to whatever purposes they need to be utilized for. So much on that. There are still a number of things that I have brought up that have not been addressed. A couple of them I'm going to follow up with them. I brought up about the obscene cost of all the substitute teachers that were utilized for non-sickness related absences last year. I believe it was $100,000 over the previous year. So I have a question there I'd like to ask. And will that change this year? Hopefully to the positive. My point about the taxpayers paying for the TRS for the administrators, will this get discussed before another year goes by? Our Colorado connection, I have a question there. Are we done going there? It really does upset me that when I brought it up one or two meetings, a couple of meetings ago, that I'm trying to find out these things, and when I find out, it feels like a cat and mouse game. And then I find out that I'm busy talking about four trips, but the fifth trip was in the middle of going on right now. I'm speaking, and the administrators can't be straightforward with the public. So that really upsets me. So I just want to know, are we done going there, or are we done having Adams Cape Coral people come here and all the expenses both ways? Sort of with that, there's something that was supposed to be going on called the total trip cost as well. It was discussed back at the policy meeting I attended back during the winter. And I want to know, wasn't this approved? I thought it was, and is it being used? It doesn't appear it is. If it isn't, why not? Okay. I want to know also, what is the historical... Oh, actually, Eric can answer that one, so I'll let that I guess we'll last point here. In light of recent events, it might be common sense to not destroy anything on video for a couple of years at least. Even if there is nothing else that's on these tapes that the Attorney General's office would find of interest, to do so at this time, to destroy at this time, I think sends a horrible message to the stakeholders. And one last point on this subject, I do feel, from what I heard on that tape, that Dr. Gordon owes an apology to the parents that have been coming here on the technology accessibility issues. The comments that I heard in the closed session, I thought, were involved. Thank you.
Anybody else?
So, John, I got a point for the structure here.
Sure.
Jeff, you made, by reading the meeting notes, you made some of those questions, you know, before pre and post professional development, travel reimbursement firms, Colorado trips, such that. So are we saying that asked and answered in the board just considered that an issue that for now we're not going to address?
Well, we've captured these, and then what we'll do is after the meeting we'll decide what we kind of can't do. Can any of this be answered from your perspective now?
My question is, that those were asked last time. And
yeah, they didn't make our list. So.
Okay, so the questions can still be answered by the board. Okay, you don't have to answer. I don't want an answer now. But at some point we say either asked and answered or... we're not going to address.
Correct.
Or it's been addressed or whatever. Okay.
I believe the question we answered tonight from Mr. Cooper was around the assistant principal.
Right.
We've answered that. And,
right.
And,
but we're good. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Just a point of order there. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Anyone else?
Kurt Buffel.
I realize I'm fairly unimportant, but curious when my questions will be answered. I just myself didn't feel we can make a meeting and rather than make them public last time. I'll count. So.
Yeah, we didn't get to it, so it's on a list. I don't have it. That's all I know about this one.
Just to clarify, Kurt, this is in regard to Spalding and facilities, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wanted to say, I like that comment. That was meant to be the updated sentiment. I just feel like that. Also, I hope there's going to be some good dialogue about enrollment and the enrollment numbers and the significant drop that was seen really between Lincoln and Corresponding. So clearly, there was some communication about being said, but people left.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right, terrific. All right, thank you, folks. So we have we've determined a need to go into closed session. So for the discussion of lawfully closed meeting minutes, whether for purposes of approval by the body of the minutes or semi-annual review of the minutes as mandated, may I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion.
Second. Roll call, please.
I made the motion. Drew is the second.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Bochansky?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so are we going
to my office?
To your office, and yeah, we'll be back
shortly.
Sure. Okay, welcome back, everyone. We are now back in open session at 8:16 p.m. at Central Services office. And the next item on our agenda is presentations, reports, and initiatives.
Jack.
I'm sorry. I was supposed to say one. just want to remind board members, in the attempt of trying to have this policy of getting our meetings done in 2 hours, that during presentations that we ask questions, but that we keep them at the proper level, and we do so efficiently and effectively. Thank you.
For that, Jack, would you mind giving us an update on construction?
Sure. There will be a few pictures of Mike has. If you don't mind, Mike, throwing those up. Franklin and Lincoln. Every lawyer trying to see it. So work is ongoing. The board report was provided with an update of what's been happening over the last 30 days and what's to be happening over the next 30 days. Real briefly, at Churchill, the storm piping is in place. Backfilling is taking place. The playground pad is up to grade, and good progress is being made there. The weather has been helping over the last few weeks, so that's good. At Forest Glen, that site is rough graded. The detention is in. The building pad is being built at this point in time. And then the landscaping will take place over the next couple of weeks to restore the landscaping at Forest Glen. And as you can see, the work at Franklin and Lincoln is going vertical. In combination with underground plumbing and rough-in for electrical, work is progressing a little bit quicker from these pictures at Franklin because there's just more work to do there with the retaining wall and additional concrete. We finally were able to make our way around where the sewer relocation took place, so that's going well. Work over the next 30 days at both locations will be to get those buildings up and enclosed. We're going to be working projecting steel on the masonry bearing in the next couple of weeks. The base brick has already started at Franklin. Start seeing some of that at Lincoln as well. And hopefully by the time we're together again, we'll be at or near doing the playground at Churchill so that we can be prepared for the other work, which is the award of the work at Churchill and Forest Glen buildings, so that we can start the site development for the addition. Schedule is still impacted. We picked up a few days through various activities, but schedule concerns lead us to anticipate spending a few dollars on premium time, either longer days or working trades on weekends, in a strategic manner, just not fully for us, but where it makes sense. We budgeted money for that in the master budget, so we'll use some of that money to to pick up that time to make sure that the school opens on time. And the budget remains intact. There's still a good contingency, and things are moving along. So, I keep it brief. Any questions on the construction update?
And the other one is going to be our schedule, you know, the sort of weather, but it sounds like
we. Yeah, we've picked up a little bit. You know, as I mentioned in the finance committee, construction is such that you can go gangbusters to a point. But at certain points, you have to allow other trades to get out of your way. And so at Lincoln right now, for example, there's a lot of underground plumbing work that's going on. So you can't be throwing up a bunch of masonry around guys that are working underneath you. So you have to let them do their work, especially on a small site like that, so they can get out of the way so you can keep going. So there's always those sequencing things that are going on. But the trade contractors have been very accommodating. They're working well together. We haven't gotten any pushback from anybody. There's high level of cooperation, so things are going well.
How's it been with students using the scaffolding?
Yeah, thanks, Erica. That is one of the big changes right now. And at each site, we've been able to keep ourselves delineated from school activities with the start of school for the last couple of weeks. For example, at Franklin, we're going out to the west now. On to Turner, and that's working out very well. We've gotten no complaints from residents or from staff that I know of, and each site has a little bit different. Churchill is where we've got the most cross traffic, and so what we've done is we've limited the time when trade contractors can be accessing the site around morning, midday, and afternoon drop off and pick up. So far so good. Things are working well.
Any other comments? Just one question. I mean, we're not hearing anything about disruption to curriculum, school, and
I have not.
No.
Karen?
No. Okay.
No, I've gotten no questions on that.
Great. Okay.
Thank you. Jack.
Okay, we move on to discussion items. This is with our new format. Members of the public will be provided an opportunity to comment after each of these topics, and we'll have our slide up there for that as well. But first discussion item is FGM contract renewal, and that's Bob.
So the FGM contract has been vetted at the Finance Committee last week, and Joe, Mr. Wachinski, had a couple of items that he wanted addressed. We've addressed those items for your review. Basically centered around number of visits to the site on a weekly basis, and then also we did not want to sort of pre-establish a budget in terms of the dollars that we were going to commit to capital projects for this summer, or actually for next summer. So we're proposing to move forward with amendments 30 to 34, and again, this is still a lot of work that needs to be sort of detailed out, and we will be bringing the board back updated recommendations as these projects start to move forward. So this is the part for discussion. Any other comments? And then we plan on bringing it back to the board for action or approval at the next board meeting.
Okay. Thank you. So slide two, I guess, as we learn this process. This is the public comments for discussion items. Essentially, people in the audience, if they want to provide any comments on what they heard, please let us know. And anybody out there that wants to do so, any comments about the FGM contract renewal? Maureen, anybody? No? Anybody? Guess? No? Okay. All right. Thank you. Anybody?
Oh. Want?
Somebody's got a comment.
Let's go to the next one.
That was pretty good.
Bid results and recommendation for Forest Glen and Churchill Building additions. Bob and Jack.
Okay, thank you. So this is up for discussion as well, not for action tonight, but we're presenting 20 open bids for Churchill and Forest Glen. The 22nd of August, we've met with the low responsive or low, apparent low bidders in each trade category and are recommending 16 of the 20 bid packages tonight. The four remaining bid packages, which are still in the process of being vetted, will be presented at a future board meeting. But in anticipating that those four bid packages will be awarded to the low bidders. We're approximately $136,000 under the projected budget for this work of $4.4 million. And looking for approval to go ahead on the 22nd with the award of these packages. There were, of the 16 packages being awarded, there were two packages that the low as-read bidder is not the one being recommended. The first one is Selective Demolition. The low as-read bidder did not submit a bid that was in complete conformance with the scope documents and has asked to have his bid withdrawn. And we were recommending that the board allow that to happen, and the demolition would then be awarded in a second low bidder revenant demolition. And then item four, which is structural steel, the as-read low bidder on bid day did not conform with the bidding specifications, and as a result is not a responsible bidder, and we're recommending that it be awarded to K&K as the low responsive and responsible bidder. Everybody else was the low as-read bidder and scoped out and held their bids and worked out. So.
Terrific.
Anything? Questions?
The public first. Anybody want to comment on the bids for Churchill and Forest Glen? Okay, none? Board members?
I said just a clarification for the first one. The low bidder is requesting that they be pulled from the bid. So it's not us questioning the bid. There's no issue with it. It's just saying we're pulling out.
Yeah, they missed things. They didn't have the full scope in their price, so they're saying, I made a mistake. Please let me withdraw my bid.
Okay, good. And these different bids, these 16 that are presented, I think you talked about this before, Jeff, just for clarification. For Forest Glen and Churchill, bidding at this point will do what for us?
The advantage is the high probability of opening these schools in August rather than mid-year of the 2015-16 school year. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to open in time for the start of school year. I hedged that just a little bit because we still have to get through this process and we have to have decent weather this fall to get to the point of foundation. We're trying to get to a minimum of foundations at each school, which is a much bigger task at Churchill because we're 10 feet below grade. There we got to build the whole site up. So as long as the weather holds and everything goes well this fall, our expectation by doing this now is that you get the whole school year and be able to remove those portables for the start of the 15-16 school year.
So we'll vote on this next. The next.
The 22nd. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Questions? Should any of these bids in the 16 that you're recommending, are they tied in with this company that said they weren't certified?
No. Mm-hmm.
All right.
When you say the weather has to hold up, what does that mean? Like 10 bad days kill it, 5 bad days kill it? I mean, any order of magnitude on that? Or?
I think 10 would be, kind of the breaking point.
Okay.
Really. I mean, 3, 4, 5, you kind of plan for, you can work around, you can make up. But if we get a couple 3 weeks of really bad, rainy weather where we can't bring trucks in and out, that's going to be a problem.
Okay. So it's tight?
Yeah, it's tight.
Yeah. Okay.
That's tight. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
If winter starts August or October 15th, and we're in the freeze, that's another thing.
Yeah. Okay. All right, anybody else? Any more questions?
My only comments are not really comments to the project, but to Jack and Ron. We're more than halfway through this. Good job. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Things are moving along. Appreciate all the cooperation you guys are doing. Joe, for all your work and all your, I know you're having conversations with Jack and Ron, but your expertise is bringing a lot to this. I defer to your expertise, but you're not sole responsible, so don't ever feel like you're out there on the line.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, next item, board meeting agendas, protocols, and time frame. Dean.
There we go. Okay, so what I did is I included in your packages, you should have all seen that sort of PowerPoint presentation. part of what I did in the PowerPoint presentation is I went back to the training that we all went to when we became board members, and we went through, and they gave us a book. Now let's see it out here. Yep, here it is. It's called Coming to Order, A Guide to Successful School Board Meetings. And in here, it's 88 pages of things you should do and things you shouldn't do in a school board meeting. And it also lays out for you the types of meetings we can have. So the italics in the presentation are all coming directly from this book. So go ahead to the next one. Two things we talked about was allocating time and public participation. There was some discussion about how long a meeting should be. The recommendation from the ISB is that they should last 2 to 3 hours. There's obviously some reason for that. It has to do with the fatigue from the public point of view, and also just being able to make sure you don't make mistakes and you can get through the meeting in the right amount of time. The other part, it talks about time boxing, about putting items in the agenda in such a way that people know when you're going to speak about them and how long you'll go. And a good example of that, I think, tonight is that because we did this presentation early on, people were able to attend that, then we went off to closed session, and then they were able to leave and they didn't have to stay here for the whole meeting. That worked out because of a lot of communication. It's good if you can actually just put that in the agenda and have those time boxes in there to go by. Go ahead. There's three slides in here about public participation. The top part all comes out of the book. And I think the things to remember on here is that there's a page in here that goes through sample agendas, and in every single sample agenda, there's 5 different sample agendas. They move public participation up early in the meeting, and they have it once in the beginning of the meeting. And they don't have it spread throughout the meeting. They don't have it at the end again. They have it once, and there's some reasons for that in there. But then they also talk about the fact of how we should respond, because I think there was some angst around how should we respond when people talk to us and how that should happen. And it really comes to the board president and the administrator that if it's something simple we can respond to, we should do it quickly and just respond. So if it's factual, we know what it is, we should respond. Otherwise, we should take it offline and respond in email, you know, in a written form.
Can I just ask a question?
The bold
there is your comment.
The bold is mine.
That's your ad.
So this is what I'm suggesting.
Right. So you're suggesting we move public participation earlier in the meeting, and when you mean earlier, like
we did today.
Well, it's always public participation is always the first thing we do. Sorry, I'm not.
Yes, like we did today. I think that's good to have it where we had it today.
Like we do it every day.
Well, we do it now,
yeah.
But then we also do it at the end.
Okay.
And I don't think we should be doing it at the end.
No, I'm just saying here, you say, all right. So you're saying, I thought this was only saying, like I looked at this and said, where do you want to move it? Before the pledge, you know, but you're just saying, you're saying two things here.
One time.
Keep it where we have it today, but one time.
One time.
That's what you're saying.
Yes. Okay. To keep the agenda moving and to be able to anticipate when we're going to do that. So that if people want to come and participate, and they have something they want to add to the meeting, they can do that and not have to sit through that.
And that would be pretty much at 7:30,
yeah,
almost every.
Yeah, we do that right at the beginning. And then the two small bullets there are how they recommend we answer the questions. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Go ahead. This gets back to something I think you touched on earlier in the meeting already, and that has to do with when we respond and how we should respond. And I noticed that over the last year in our board meetings, we've started to respond during the meetings. There are people who say things from the audience during the meetings, and we start responding to that. And I think that we're getting off track on what our agenda is and the way to run a public meeting. And this is a regular public meeting. And the way that we should do it is we should, it's our meeting. It is things that we put on the agenda that we have to get through in a business section, and we allow public participation at the beginning of the meeting. And that's what this page here talks about.
So this is self-regulation.
It is.
Well, it is, and I guess ultimately we're going to decide if we want to subscribe to this as
right.
a board, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just like to say, while we're looking at the slide, I think not entertaining personal attacks on employees, board members, or other individuals is key. And I think we should all commit as a board to not do that and require that same behavior from the public. In the interest of goodwill and everybody working positively after the meeting, that we don't have anything like this to take place during the meeting.
Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, this is obviously a significant departure from our current practice that we adopted, but you know, in my experience, it's not the past year where people have made comments. I mean, that's been going on ever since I've been on the board, but honestly, so I mean, I know your experience, but I'm sure when you guys were sitting out there, you know, there was some back and forth. So it, to me, it just hasn't been limited to the past year, but I understand where you're coming from.
I'm just speaking from my experience on the board. This one here. This is important because where I think we might be, where we can do a better job is it has to do with a regular board meeting versus a public meeting. And there are public hearings and public meetings and town hall type meetings, which we've done now for Think Tank. We did that. We've done it for the listening sessions. We do it when we do things like the Internet Safety. And when we set up meetings like that, we can make sure all the members of the public know what the topic is, when we're going to have it, and encourage a lot of participation in that. And by getting more participation, we're going to get a lot more different viewpoints like we did just recently with the Internet policies. So what I'm also suggesting is that we continue to have regular public meetings, public hearings, where we can have a lot more participation. So in a regular meeting, the audience is more an observer, but at a public meeting, they participate more. And that's the difference between what we try to do every 2 weeks at these meetings and what we should be doing with public meetings, and I think you've talked about some of those today. So the last slide is just kind of those three items that I was proposing that I thought we should talk about. And one is to publish an agenda, put times in it, be self-governing, you know, keep ourselves on track on it. The next is move up public participation always to the beginning and respond accordingly. If you respond quickly, do it. If not, we should handle it in writing afterwards. And then also to engage the public in listening sessions and town halls to get more participation.
So let's start with comments from the public. That's our process now, right? Anybody from the public want to comment?
Why do you call it a green sheet? I'll grab it.
You don't know.
No, it's just a comment. So.
Okay, yeah. It's a comment. I think, John, you've already kind of said this. I'm a little confused because it's kind of a departure from what everyone agreed to last time. You know, it's a 2 week time span when that proposal was first presented and it was discussed last week. So I'm kind of confused why another change is being brought in after the fact. And I guess I don't really know what the purpose is. It seems like if it's to keep meetings short and concise, and I don't know that public participation is really what's making the meetings really long. I know the public sometimes talks, but I don't know that that's adding hours onto the board meeting. So I guess I'm just trying to understand the purpose of why we're trying to reduce the amount of public participation if the purpose is to shorten meetings. As far as public participation at the beginning and the end, I think it's necessary in both places because sometimes people want to speak, but they actually want to wait until after the meeting and to hear what you said. They want to give you a chance to actually discuss something before they say something. So they don't want to talk. They don't want to speak at the beginning of the meeting. They're going to hold their thoughts and wait until the end and see what transpires during the meeting. So I think that's why it is good to have it at the end of the meeting as well as at the beginning. A public hearing versus a board meeting are two completely different things in my mind. The board meetings are a meeting to make decisions, but you're making decisions on behalf of the community, and when you're discussing it and you're voting on something, discussing it, approving it, whatever it may be, this is the opportunity for the community to give their input on that issue right then. Whereas a listening session would be a month before, a month after. It's not necessarily timely to the issues that are being discussed. So you do need both. They serve completely different purposes. So
okay.
That's it. Sorry.
Thank you for your comments. Anybody else want to add something different to? Okay, board members.
Well, I'll start. You know, when we got this from Dean, it was in response to John, your adjustment to the meeting to want to include comment like we're doing now, but also just looking at the nature of our meeting, too. And I think, you know, you added tonight a couple of things, which was the time clock and then also, you know, reminding people to, you know, stay in that mark period, and also if you're going to say the same thing, then do a ditto. So thank you for doing that. For me, part of where I felt we've gotten off track sometimes in our meeting is partly the length, but then also some of the repetitive nature of public comment. And people have a right to say what they're going to say, and please don't misquote me, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Everyone has a right to say what they want to say. I think the value of public participation at the beginning is a level setter, at least it has been for me for the last 7 years, so that I can get a sense of what people are concerned about walking into the meeting, and then as we go to the discussion on those items, because they've seen it on the agenda and they want to bring it up, then it helps to inform some of my thoughts that I've brought to the table as well, so that's helpful. It has been my experience in the last short amount of time, maybe, whatever, 5 months, 6 months, that the second part of public participation is often redundant to what we've heard at the beginning. And I would rather have those things in writing, because then I think it's easier for us to be able to read through them, get an email, and respond in that way. And so that's part of, I think, the for me, less of the value of public participation at the closed end. It's not that we can't take information, we can talk to people, certainly we stay here and have one-to-one time. But the addition of public participation for District 41 came in two times, just as a part of my early part on the board. We only had one public participation at the time, so we included a second one to bookend it. So that's my own frustration, I suppose, on some level with it, is that if there's redundancy, I'd rather see some of that in writing so that I could parse it out, I could see it, and get email and follow up that way. The beginning public participation is always helpful for me, because often people bring to the table the things we're going to talk about, and so it level sets kind of that conversation. I like the fact that we might time box. There's an agenda in meetings that I'm in daily where we don't have time frames on things, and so not to put, you know, 30 minutes on this 15, but to box it so that, and I did get a little bit of feedback, and you were going to talk about this, so I talked to some parents over the weekend at an event I was at, and asked them, you know, why don't you come talk at board meetings? And a couple of the comments were, you know, we read the minutes if we have a, you know, concern, you know, I'll call you, Erica, or whatever. But the other one is that we're not always quite sure when the agenda item we want to talk about or we want to hear, where that flows in it, because it could be relatively early, like we were tonight, or it literally could be an hour and a half into the meeting. And so I think I like that part of the proposal, because I think it forces us. I think we do a good job generally as a board of prepping for the meetings, coming in with our questions. We get to administrators ahead of time through Paul and Maureen as our point of contact to make sure they know what's coming to the table. I would say probably 90% of the time we're pretty good about that. But I think in order for the public to have more of a framework, that it would be helpful to do that. And the other piece of this, and this is, I'm glad that John brought this up, you know, initially when we were piloting this, because as you pilot something, as we talk about this and we take a look at it, it helps to frame it. And the whole point is for us to be able to have some deeper conversations. And so I like the idea of that community piece. And we saw lots of different faces at the last several meetings than we ever do, certainly at the board meeting. And so it just allows people to know that they're going to have face time with the superintendent, board members, whatever. So that piece for me is critical, that we start to include those.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I have a couple questions, Dean, just about the some of your proposals. And I guess I know the process that John started is like an evolving, ever-changing process, and this is part of that process. As things are tweaked, we figure out how we fine-tune this. I like the fact that we're responding, in the manner that we're responding to public comments, and I think that's a bit of a something that John has championed, and I think seeing that come into place, and seeing that having a realization of from the concept to where it is today, I like that. I think we need to continue on that path. I want to make sure that's not lost in what the proposal is. The other thing is,
I'm sorry, Joe, I don't mean to interrupt, but are you saying you like the Dean? Correct me if I'm wrong, if I misread that. I read Dean's proposal is if there's public comments, we'll listen to them and then we'll submit in writing. And what we're doing tonight is if we responding verbally to comments that we heard last week. Where did you?
I guess the tracking of the questions. Okay. That is, questions raised. We list it, we memorialize it, and we answer it. I'm more of the process person, and it's less important to me than if it's verbal or it's written. But the process needs to be followed through, and follow through and follow up is so key to what the board does. Does that answer?
Yeah. So I'm sorry, Joe. I don't mean to hijack. We're point one, but we're asking questions that I have. So, Dina, are you saying to respond to the public as Paul and John did today, it would be similar to the blue sheets we got here, as it was responded in a written form and published or for the community or just to the member?
What I'm saying is suggested. Is that if you can answer it quickly in the meeting, you should answer it quickly in the meeting. Mm-hmm. If it takes longer than that, it should go to the right person in the administration or possibly to the board, who should follow up with that person.
Okay.
It doesn't need to come back to a meeting and take up the next meeting's time to read it out loud.
Okay.
You need to get back to it because there are certain things that come to the administration that they're better off doing and have to spend time and look into it and do study and research on it to be able to comment back.
Okay.
But not that we have to take that public participation then and put it on the next meeting and then read it again and then respond to it.
Okay.
You don't need to do that. And it's not even suggested that that's a good thing to do. It's suggested that it's taken offline and responded directly to the person who asked about it, if they provide the proper information.
Okay. But you're, just to be clear, public participation is up front. People speak. We don't say anything unless we can quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we respond in writing. The practicality of that, because we used to respond in writing, mm-hmm. and I think I told one of you guys, I was going through a folder and found a letter from Vivoda to a community member,
mm-hmm.
Like a three-page letter.
Yeah.
And 99% of the time, someone on Paul's staff is writing that letter.
Yep.
And so...
And 99% of the time, it's around curriculum. It's management type of issues.
I just know when I read that letter, I was like, man, this must have taken a lot of time to put together. But
I will agree that a lot of these responses take a lot of time to put together.
Well, I think that's time we owe the public.
That's exactly right.
I mean, it is time consuming. I guess the list that you provided of all the responses that somebody on staff has pulled together. But I think that's the job of our staff, to provide the information. I mean, within reason, but
yeah.
It does take time, and we need to spend the time.
Again,
sorry.
My other question was, you're talking about you know, more town hall meetings and increase community engagement with different meetings. And I just, again, it sounds really good, and I like the concept. I just want, I guess I'm looking for a commitment that that's going to happen.
Yeah, and the commitment is going to come from us, and it's going to come from Paul. I think a good example of that was this last internet safety session that was during the week. Even the person at the session said, I'm really surprised. This is on a weeknight. The weather's pretty nice. And we had maybe 50 people show up at that session, mm-hmm. and some of you were there. Mm-hmm. So we had 50 people show up at the session because they were interested in that topic, and they knew that that was the topic that was being talked about, and that they'd be able to ask some questions and stuff, and there'd be an expert there. And we need to continue to do that. We could do more of that. We don't need to, but the point is not to confuse that with what we're trying to do in a regular meeting. You know, that the teachings on this are very succinct about a regular meeting. You need to get through all of the work that we need to do at a regular meeting, have the discussion items we need, and not have it devolve every regular meeting into a public hearing. That generally at a regular meeting, the audience is an observer. At a public hearing, they take more participation. And these aren't my words. They're from the Illinois Association of Schools.
And I think that's one of the key things, being a new board member, although we can't say we're new anymore, but yeah. Just went through that book and the classes, and we took classes at the, or I did at the III conference, and there was some reinforcement of a properly run board meeting. The thing that's clear that the presentation does and the book does, and I know some of the rhetoric around this public hearing is, compared to, you know, someone who's a trustee who may have, there may be a public hearing, and residents of a village would then come up and say their piece and why somebody shouldn't have a variance to a setback or something like that. The reason that occurs is it's a public hearing.
Yes.
It's not the business board meeting.
Right.
And that's a key difference, and some of that has been discussed over this time. We're trying to tweak what we're doing here. And I think that's one thing that came back and reread some of those pages. It's pretty key that we didn't say that when that was discussed, but that book definitely highlights that. As I personally have been a presenter of a lot of those village meetings, and it's usually for public hearings because you need variances, special uses, other things like that, and you do get the residents, it could be 200 residents coming in on an issue.
Right.
And that's normal. When we saw that with Think Tank, we were not on the board. We were in the audience. Mm-hmm. And we could see that, and it was treated as such. So I think that's something that I saw that was a pretty clear part of that writing in this book. And I think that when I look at it, I sum it up as going back to the basics. So.
Sure, I've got some comments. I find a little irony that we're going to the Illinois School Board Association here at this point. But anyway, I like the idea that I like the 2 to 3 hours, because we've been trying 2 hours, so now I go, we can go up to 3 hours. So that's a good part of that. I think that's good. That gives us the time we need to get things done. I like the idea of putting time on the agenda. I think that's fine. That's, you know, to me, that's a trend that's sort of gone away, because it's just hard to manage that you can hit each, you know, each line item. But certainly we could try it. Putting times on the agenda, I'm fine with that. The rest of it, I go back to a couple things. I go back to being on the board and 2005, and it was the whole Green Line discussion, and Michael Lynch was a speaker, and at one point he kind of stood up and said, you know, you got, he goes to boards all over the place, and he was like, you
Michael
guys,
Lynch? Sean, I'm sorry.
He was the Green Line guy, the guy that brought,
was he a board member?
No, he was a public person, and he went to different boards and spoke about levies and things like that, and he actually made a comment that surprised me, and I met with him a few times, but his comment was, that the community was fortunate that a board would listen and have this, you know, not dialogue, not conversation, but he felt that it was something special in Glen Ellyn that he didn't necessarily see at other other boards, and that was kind of interesting to me. I felt that, you know, I go back to my presentation, right? What we sort of agreed on as a team was that, you know, our current state problem is that, you know, it looked like we had a one-way communication where people just speak to us and we sit here. And I think pretty much people agree that that was maybe not what we were trying to convey. And I think going to just one public participation and you're done, kind of a one-and-done thing, doesn't really address that. I thought the inconvenience, that was a factor where people have to show up at a certain time. If they miss it, they're done, which is why we had the thing at the end. I understand Erica's comment, it can be a repeat, but I don't feel like that last public participation, you know, I think the last one went less than 7 minutes, so, you know, I don't know if that's a problem. I feel that when we just sit up here, I felt that every year I've been on the board, and we don't respond, we just look like we're just not receptive to people. I still think that'll create this problem. The timing of town halls and public halls, a lot of work that goes into those, and yeah, that's fine, we should do those, but there's a lot of work that goes into that, and the timing, sometimes our issues don't allow for the timing to say, okay, we'll have a town hall on this day, and by the way, are any board members available and all that. So this to me is a clear departure from where we were 2 weeks ago, which to me sort of sends another message that, you know, we can't seem to agree on anything. It just doesn't seem to me like it's the right thing to do. I like putting the times. I like the 2 to 3 hours. But I don't think we gave this a good enough shot. And if you look at what is happening, you know, the Park District is adopting some of the practices that we're adopting here. DuPage County Board is, the Village Board is, you know, they are trying to engage, which, you know, I've said it before, as a board member, the toughest part about being a board member is you don't really always know what the people are thinking in terms of, you know, what their needs are, because, you know, you get 5 or 6 people that come and nobody else does. So when people do want to speak up, it's good to encourage that and hear that. So I think this takes that away.
Well, I don't know that it's a departure. I think it's you know, I don't know if the word that Drew used, kind of a tweaking. And I think that the idea of the engagement piece, and I'll go back even as you're being retrospective, when I was on the board my third year, worked with another board member, and we talked about what are, you know, board goals and communication around those, and engagement was a big piece of it. And I remember bringing back to the board some ideas, and the board could not agree on a direction in terms of community engagement, you know, whether it was hearings or this or whatever. And so this is not a new, you know, I think, struggle for a board. And I haven't been to a park district meeting, you know, lately. But every municipality has to know that they got to get through their business, and that's the intention of every 2 weeks. And we all agree on that. This is a regular board business meeting. But there's plenty of other ways to engage. And I think where I see a tweak to this is retaining a second public participation, which is fine, but requesting that the public not repeat earlier comments, rather. Maybe put those down to reinforce them and put it in writing, because I know Maureen will collect those. And we have this new format, as you said, Catherine, about who was the speaker, what was the issue, et cetera, so we can see where there's, you know, continuing issues and we can get down. But if there's a tweaking to the earlier comment or whatever, that's fine. But for me, it's really this desire to, at the end of the meeting, be able to you know, number one, get our business done during the meeting. And, you know, I would agree that, you know, public participation doesn't add a lot of time to that. But it's more about the efficiency of the process. And so I'm not uncomfortable with keeping a second public participation. I would ask that we put as part of our protocol that it is new information or, you know, an additional comment or that type of thing. And that's fine. I don't see people showing up at I don't think I've ever been at a board meeting where somebody showed up at 9:30 because they knew public participation was going to be at 9:35 and they couldn't come ahead of time. Either we get a, and to your point earlier, John, I think this board over the years has been very engaged. Lots of emails back and forth. You know, we got an email from a member of the public and there were literally, I counted them, 22 questions embedded in that email. That's a lot of requests, a lot of information to want, you know, from board members. And it's perfectly legitimate. There has to be a way to be able to be able to give that information out. And I think for me, the biggest takeaway is how do we kind of go forward, which is create more engagement in terms of conversation with the public. I walked home down Glencoe with a man that was at the last tech session, just talking about that technology session, off the cuff, exceeded his expectations. This is great stuff. I mean, those are the kind of things, I think, those anecdotal conversations that are probably more valuable for me on some level. To your point, John, regardless of where it falls in terms of our board business, all that stuff's important. So I think we do need to commit as a board to do some of this more larger engagement and manage the meeting here so that our time is well spent here, tightened up, and we can get out and do some of this other stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the community engagement's fine. I mean, the public hearings are fine, but I mean, this, you know, my interpretation of this is, you know, shut it down at the business meetings except for up front.
No, that's not what I'm reading. I mean,
that's what it says.
But wait, when you say shut it down at the beginning, I'm not saying that. I'm saying you open it up at the beginning. I'm not saying shut it down. You open it up, you have public participation, people who want to hear it, people who want to participate, know when it is on the agenda, then you're done with that. That isn't just what I'm saying. That's what's suggested in the trainings. Now, I don't know when you did the training, but that's what's suggested in the trainings. And the reason for that is to have an orderly meeting where you move from one topic to the other and don't come back like we do at the end. I think that that's an important part of a regular board meeting. We get public participation when we put a topic out, like we did with the listening tours for the internet safety. And we get a lot of people, not just the people who come to board meetings, but we got a lot of people. That's public participation. Mm-hmm. We have what, 3,600 students in our classes, in our schools here. There's a lot of parents involved with those 3,600 students. We have to get to more of them. And that's how you do that.
No one's arguing that.
And then, well,
no one's arguing getting out and getting to more people.
Well, you had said that we had a problem with board member participation. I don't know if any of the listening tours, there were board members at every single one of them.
No, I'm saying it makes it more complicated from a timing perspective.
But I think we're capable of doing that, and we've shown that. Yeah. That we come to these meetings, and we participate in these meetings, and we come to multiple meetings to get it done. And it's a better format for it than a regular board meeting, which is different than a public hearing. And that's the point. That's the difference.
So let me, because I wanted to speak to this a little bit too. So what I'm hearing is, what I heard, because we haven't had a chance to speak, yet, but what I've heard is we all agree that we need to self-govern better. We all agree that time box, and if I'm not saying all, what I'm hearing is time boxing, and we're down to how do we get community civil? Because I chose that purposely because I think we do have community engagement, and saying that we're going to limit it to here or not to here is, it puts a negative tone on it. But so I think we do have community engagement. So it comes down to how much we want to take in that information during a business meeting. And I'll go work backwards. With the end of the session, community comments. I don't know why it was put in place, and honestly, I can say that for the year that I've been here, and this is just my experience, and John and Eric and Drew, you've been here a lot longer, I should say never because that is an absolute term. Yeah. I have never received any additional value from that end of session commentary. Now, taking that commentary and getting it a written form is, you know, if I got it at 1:30 in the morning or 6 a.m. the next morning, it gives us stuff to do and work through and through the management and administration for them to move through that. But so I've never, outside of being repetitive commentary, I've never gotten any additional information from the end of meeting community engagement. So I would lean on the side of striking that. But then it goes to trying to understand the level of community engagement during a business meeting. And I think we're all agreeing that there should be a pre-agenda or wherever it is today, right now, first item or whatever, to have it and to discuss it. Is there going to be further engagement in the topics under discussion? So that's what I'm hearing, and I think if I try to focus the conversation on that, tonight's meeting, you know, I don't know if it's going to be, you know, stereotypical where no one's going to want to talk about the FQC meetings or no one's going to talk to any of that stuff. But, you know, we know that there's discussion items that are out there that people are encouraged to speak, want to speak to. So, I don't know. I to Joe's comment, should we, you know, in the report, should we go back to our training and get back to basics of what a business meeting should be, or do we open it up to keep that community engagement on each individual topic? I don't think this is a divergent. They totally changed from what we're doing now and what we proposed 2 weeks. Every board member has the opportunity to bring any topic to any board member. So, we shouldn't discount Dean's opportunity or anybody's opportunity to bring a topic to a board member just because it's different. You know, we should always engage in open and honest communication and
which I think we're doing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, but I wanted to your point, this, I don't think this is a total divergent of what we're doing today. What I think I heard is what we have is a discussion on how much engagement we want to have internally into that meeting. So, you know, we saw this proposal, and I still want to chew on it a little bit, and I'm still open to hearing more comments on that mid-meeting conversation.
Mm-hmm. I should say something. I don't think we're that far off. I think it's unfortunate that we weren't able to sit down and kind of hammer out a new protocol right with your arrival as president and not have to revisit the question. I think that's hard because we've hardly given your new ideas, John, enough time to live with and chew on and see how well this is working. But I think that Dean is trying to address some issues that we want to be efficient with our time, and I'm with other people that I heard tonight. I think putting a time limit on the agenda, if we have to exceed it by a minute or two here or there, you know, we understand that can happen, but at least agree together to aim for, we'll give it this much time. And it's easy to talk forever on a topic and not get to the hard point of having to make a decision and move on. And part of putting time on the agenda makes us do that, makes us move on. So I think that's a really good thing. And you said you were open to doing that, which I think is great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't view the time issue of the board meeting as the public. It's us. I mean, it's us talking and repeating. I mean, we're guilty of repeating and, you know, everyone's saying the same thing, too. So the time is not the public participation. It's us. So I agree that that's a good thing to have.
Right. In terms of getting the public input and using that to help inform our decisions, just on my limited time, I found getting the information from the public by email ahead of time to sift through and read it is really the most useful thing for me. And I'm not saying we have to constrain everybody to do that, but I just wonder if that might be another way to have public input, that people email board members all the time with their ideas and helpful things that we can study ahead of time. And I can deal with that much better than I can just hearing something here at 7:35 and then having to act on it. So, you know, maybe that's the way to enlarge the public comment, but not say it has to be at this particular juncture of the meeting. I don't know, Dean, if that fits into your proposal or not. But it's
well, yeah, I think that part of what we always do is get a lot of emails, and that helps to inform us. This is more about how we do a regular meeting mm-hmm. than it is about getting information in.
Okay.
I'm confident that if we need to get information in, we get the information. People email us, they talk to us on the street. If we have a listening session, they come to the listening sessions. Mm-hmm. We're getting a lot of participation in that. We're talking about how to get through a regular meeting. And part of what you do in a regular meeting, at least according to the trainings, was you allow public participation at the beginning, and then you get into the meeting to resolve your agenda. You have to get through your agenda. And what I feel that we've started to do is somehow we're feeling that because we throw around words of transparency and involvement and all, that we're not understanding all the rest that the district does for public participation. We're just talking about it doesn't have to happen during a regular board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
That we allow a period of time because you have to, and because it's a good idea to allow a period of time. One reason it's good, I believe, not to have a session at the end. I happen to be a hockey coach, and we have a rule in hockey that says there's a 24-hour rule. If you don't like something in the game, you have to wait 24 hours before you talk to a coach or a player about it. You don't do it right during the game. And part of that is in a board meeting. A lot of time we present different things. We have topics on here. It's nice to everybody go back and have some reflection before we comment on it. As opposed to seeing who can have the last word. Is it us? Is it the administration? Is it the public? And the idea is to have these discussions, and that's why we usually do things where we bring it up for discussion and we move to another meeting to talk about it again, so that we can have that reflective time. And I would agree with you entirely that when I get something in email and I can read it, besides something just being dropped,
mm-hmm.
that it's a lot easier to get my thoughts, and that's what I did. When we came up with this, I had actually mentioned that I had no time to prepare for that presentation that day. So I was here, it was like public comment. We were in a participation, and I thought, wait, I remembered going through the training, and they had spent time on keeping these things separate. So I went back and reread the book. And it takes a week or two to get through things like that and then put together a presentation. Then I got it all to you in advance so you could all look at it. I hope everybody got a chance to look at it before today. So you could look at it, you could go back to the book, you could check on things. And that's the intent, is to make it so that we can be better at what we do rather than being...
So your objective, essentially, outside of a few jabs there, which were not...
Well, you gave me a jab, too, so let's keep the jabs going back and forth, sir.
You had 30 days to, you know, look at it, so...
No, I didn't have 30 days to look at it.
Yeah, you did.
No,
you
had
30 days
had
before we adopted it.
So, let's move.
So your objective is, what you're saying is, the meetings will be more efficient if we have public participation up front, and then we're done, we don't respond unless we can immediately. And to address the issue of public engagement, you want to have these town halls. That's essentially what you're saying.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
we'll have them on a periodic basis.
So your objective is really around the efficiency of the meeting. And my
right.
argument will be that, you know, there's the efficiency of the meeting is not caused by public participation. Now it may cause a sentiment that makes us feel uncomfortable. Or makes us feel like, man, you know, that's a little bit of a downer. But that's our job, is to hear that and to try to address it. So.
And we can do that at the public participation at the meetings, too. It's just that we get a lot more of the public will do that. A lot more
people. One of the things that 87 does is they put public participation in the center of their agenda so that all the upfront stuff is done, and then they have their reports. And it's typically, I think, the reports or initiatives, those type of things
yeah.
where people are commenting on. And so they house it right in the center, and they have new business at the end and an adjournment. And so our other on our agenda is kind of that new business piece, so we can, you know, I have an article tonight I want to hand out to people that I got, you know, that's another kind of thing. But they house it in the center of the meeting so that the meat of the agenda, you know, if you go by rule of thirds for meeting, top part is that entree kind of orientation, here's what we're doing, and then the meat of the meeting is really that middle part where we do all of the reporting, and then public participation comes so that it picks up, I think, a little bit of what John's saying and Dean as well. It allows people to respond to the heart of discussions, our back and forth, which we would do in that initiative reports, those type of things. And then it gives us information that we can then take to reflect on, to come back with.
So that happens after the discussion period?
It happens after adoption of minutes, board committee reports, board member reports, and then public participation. So it's housed right in the center of their meeting.
And then followed later by action
and items. And then last action items, the consent agenda, that type of stuff.
There's about five different agendas in this book that you can take a look at, that you can see where you want to put it. You can move it, you know, around. It's usually, it's always in the first half, the first third of the meeting.
Yeah. I mean, what are your thoughts on that being?
I don't care where we put it. I do. I want to put it earlier in the meeting rather than later in the meeting. But I think it's important to do it once.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that, John? That District 87 tin plate.
Well, I think the Village and the Park District and DuPage County are better. What I like is, and you know, this is what I was trying to address, the public participation should be about things that aren't on the agenda, so we know, okay, what are people thinking about? What is it, you know, okay, got it, so is this something we should be looking at, not looking at? And we can make that decision. Sometimes I think we're afraid to say, which might be leading to some of this, we're afraid to say, you know, great, appreciate your comment, but we're not going to deal with it, right? But so I like the upfront non-agenda, and I like after we give a presentation that someone can provide a comment or some input. The end one, I never really thought about it, whether it's value add or not. You know, to me, the most important part is the non-agenda and the discussion item one, so people can, you know, they hear something, they can provide comments. And my assumption is that there's extra eyes and ears out there, and you know, we may give a construction update and someone might say, hey, just to let you know, scaffolding over here is falling down and want to make you guys aware of that. And, okay, that's it, you know.
That could happen at a board meeting, but it certainly could happen outside a board meeting too. You know, those kind of things. But I'm wondering, you know, in hearing you talk about this, I think our board at this point has agreed that response to community is important, and that if there is an issue that comes to us, you know, my MO is typically I need to reflect on that, you know, and because you're hearing one part of the story or one part of it, right? So we want to be conscious of that.
Which I don't think anything has changed.
We're going to respond.
I don't think that has changed.
I mean,
the purpose of this process that we have now is that we document it and then we wait till the next meeting. We don't respond, you know, right away so that we can follow up where we need to, unless we can, of course.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to continue to do that. But I wonder if what we've gotten to is this idea that really the most valuable comment comes because people have heard. We've had a couple of people say this tonight. We've heard some of the conversation, or we were at the previous meeting, and now it's going forward. And maybe we find a middle ground to test this by moving that participation after the heart of our conversation, so that we can get that more immediate feedback. And then, to your point, John, we follow up with it the next week immediately, or you know, within that week, as Dr. Gordon and Karen Carlson and all, you know, folks are doing, and or you, you know, if it's appropriate for you.
Well, I mean, I'd like to see us continue this for a little while. I don't know that this has created a big problem. Been inefficient. I haven't seen inefficiency based on the two meetings we've had, so I'd like to continue to try this as opposed to just move to something different 2 weeks later or, you know, a month later.
You know, I think what's important for me is that, and I've said this, and I'll repeat myself, is that we find other ways to incorporate conversation versus just comment. And for me, the business meeting for me has always been where we do our hours of prep work. We come in, we ask the right questions, or we've been given that feedback, and we move through it. And the public participation piece for me has always been about something happening in that moment, in that meeting, or on an agenda item, and that to me is the most important thing. I would, agree with Patrick, and I said this earlier, that the latter part of it, it's typically later at night, and there's some redundancy to that. I'd rather have that in writing. I'm with Catherine. I'm a much better reflector when I'm reading it. So you initiated this, John, and I think it's a good thing. I mean, I hope what you're hearing is that there's parts of this that are good, because it's causing us as a board to examine our own process and protocol, and that's important. Most boards don't make the time to do this, so it's a good thing. But I'm wondering if part of getting at where, a middle ground for this is to move our participation to that center aisle where we get our conversation out, and then people can say to us, I completely agree with that, or I disagree with that, or you missed this point, or whatever it might be, because they heard our comment already. So that would be my...
Yeah, and
I would agree. I like that idea.
It's not that I don't like that idea. I'm trying to remember why we have public participation at the end.
We added it, right?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm trying to think. I think it was always like that, but
I think let's go to our expert.
Yeah.
Our friend.
Our friend of 17 years.
The bottom one was added, yeah.
And it was to give the members of the community an opportunity to comment on things that were discussed.
How long ago?
How long ago was that added?
It was, Ann was here.
Okay.
So, I don't think we added it.
And okay. Well, you could take all these comments together. That's what Patrick kind of said in his character. You put the public comment for the action items. It meets the guidelines that were set, which we just went through and it was also recommended by the ASB in the first third.
Joe, you got to speak up. Sorry. I can't hear you though. I'm sorry.
The goal would be to have it after the discussion item, so instead of going after one item after another, we can gather their thoughts. It would be good to allow them to do that as an act. Instead of saying, gotta do it right now, they can gather their thoughts, they can comment, they can also comment on non-agenda items, all within one line item, right after the discussion item, and right before the action item.
And it would be after our board member reports too, so there could be some.
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, you'd be moving your board member reports up. That I don't know that I concur with that one fully, but I think because that's fine. I mean, they're reports. I mean, those are reports. Those aren't discussions.
That's true.
So and that's and I think the key thing for me is that those public comments are coming before we vote, and that's the most important time. So I think that's the middle ground of all this discussion. And I'm with Erica here, and Patrick, you said the same thing. It's tweaking. It's tweaking your idea. You opened it up. Great idea to open up. And I think what I said when you opened it up about 30 days ago, whenever that was, August 11th, we said, hey, let's pilot it. Let's go and tweak it along the way. Let's not hold it stagnant at any point in time. That was my goal. So to me, I think this becomes more efficient. It's better for the public than... I like the box idea. We've all said that. I don't think that's definitely redundancy. But that's what I'm hearing. So I'm good.
Could we try that? And then it would, that public participation after the heart of the meeting, would I think get at, John, what you're looking for too, which is to provide the comment. And it could be, bundled in that moment and still have the opportunity to respond. We could still do that.
Yeah, Yeah, I get the tweaking, maybe the last public participation, but I certainly, there's six of you and one of me, so.
There's seven of us.
Yeah, we're all in this together.
No, on this issue. I mean, I'm saying let's keep piloting this. Yeah. I mean, I don't see that there's a, don't see that we've created any problems here at this point to make this change. The public participation in the middle, I like the idea of people being able to, you know, do that. You know, but people do have schedules, so you know, some people can be here at 7:30, some people can be here at 10 o'clock. It just depends, and we're limiting it to one time. I just think that just narrows the band and makes it harder, and it's already hard enough to get people to come here and speak anyway. So,
but I don't know. If we time box it though, and say the discussion items are going to be from 7:45 to 8:15, then open community comments or public comments at 8:15. You know, they know that they can be here between 7:30 and 8:30, and they're down putting little Johnny with that at 8:30, and they're done.
So if we say public participation is at 8:30, I mean, it's got to be a standard time. It seems kind of odd that one day it's at 8:30, next day it's at 9:30.
Maybe that's another reason why they suggested you move it earlier in the meeting. Because as we know, we've had meetings go very late, and occasionally we have a meeting that ends up very shorter. If you put it too late in the meeting, you could be done talking about topics, and then you have to wait.
Yes and no, but I think it goes back to keeping the integrity of a time limit where we say, if we're having discussion items and it's going over, and I'm just going to stick with 8:15, and we're on a discussion item and it's our first one and we're going 30 minutes into it, that's probably a self-realization that, hey, this thing needs to be vetted out more.
Right.
So, like Catherine, you said it puts time pressures to decision-making to move things forward. So if we're still talking about the first topic 30 minutes into the conversation, that has to be tabled because that still has to be vetted out, because we're not all on the same page or enough questions have not been asked. So,
but then that, if I followed the logic there, which I, you know, then that public participation, if it's at 8:30 and we have to do that, then we sort of defeat the purpose of letting people hear what we want to say to participate.
No, I think it would allow to say that, hey, we know that we need to talk about this more, and if we need to talk about it more, you probably have your own questions to ask about this, because we're probably uncovering stuff that you may or may not have questions about. But if we're still talking about something, you know, that first topic for 40, and I'm cartooning and exaggerating, 40 minutes, then it's not ready to be moved. And so
I know we have a cycle where we have discussion, it comes back, and we have a second discussion.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
So
going on now.
We can be point of order.
John?
And you're right, then we know that helps create, to your point earlier in the meeting, John, a little bit more self-governance. I think for me that this whole conversation, and it's a good one, is that, you know, what the kind of comment we have, I mean, we've had historically, you know, similar same faces depending on the topic and you know, that feedback, which is important. And so if it's important, I think people come, I've always said that, you know, they will, if they don't come all the time, then something is going to, you know, kick them in here. That's important for them to be here. And I think, and for me, the takeaway is finding a time where we can put it in a more concrete way, where they've heard some of at least our initial conversation on their first reading or first conversation, so that we can get that feedback and then we can take that forward. And it gives, I think that's the heart of the meeting, is that middle part of the meeting when we did what we did earlier. And what that does is compress your comment idea, John, which I think is a good one, with the idea of being able to catalog the comments so that Maureen can have them and then you can get back to it too. It doesn't preclude us from further conversation about it.
So just process here so you guys will think about it. We'll talk about it the next meeting and then decide, I guess.
Yeah, maybe a present meeting you can come up with kind of an agenda and see what the time box might look like.
Well, I think it'd be good to come up with some sort of listening session agenda or time frame and as well. Because you're trading off, you know, running an efficient and effective meeting by the Illinois School Board Association with also engaging in input. So.
Was that a job?
Huh?
And it's John.
Is that a job?
John, two earlier.
No,
comment,
so that's what you're doing.
John, two earlier comment about the timeliness of the public engagement pieces. Some of those will be aligned with conversations that we have to have. Other ones will be kind of an open conversation.
Yeah, so Dee, my point there is that it, you know, this is the training. This is Illinois School Board Association. This Illinois School Board Association also recommends that you keep the board as far away as possible to differentiate. And to me, that's not what we're doing in the village. It's not what we're doing at the park district. It's not what we're doing.
Well, we have so a pretty small room here, so that doesn't.
Yeah, and the point is the differentiation between a regular meeting and meetings where you get all of the public engaged on a topic, not just people who have the ability to come to a meeting every 2 weeks on Monday. And we want to be able to talk to people about topics so that they can come in and do it. That's what we're talking about with the other ones. I think what we do is we're elected to do this job, and we're supposed to do this at our regular board meetings, and we have to stay on track to get our job done during these meetings. And part of our job is to have public input, and that's the best way to do it, according to them at least, is to do it in a format where you say, here's where we're going to participate, and you invite people in to participate. These are regular meetings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other comments?
So we should get maybe ideas to you then even about some of the listening sessions.
Yeah, I think, no, I mean, let's get a sample listening session scheduled together so that we can put this as a package as opposed to just the public participation part, because this is a package. So.
Okay.
All right. Consent agenda. Are there any item board members would like pulled from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Am I supposed to say this note? There's a corrected copy of the August.
Oh, yes.
Huh?
Yeah. Yes.
There's a corrected copy of the August 25th, 2014 regular board minutes at your places. May I have a motion? Oh, does anybody want anything pulled? I have a motion to approve the reports and recommendations contained in the consent agenda, which includes human resources, personnel report, employee recommendations, internal transfers, finance, facilities, and operations, school district payment order, August 20th through September 2nd, 2014, other matters, approval of board meeting minutes, August 25th, 2014, regular meeting minutes, August 25th, 2014, regular closed meeting minutes, semi-annual review of closed session minutes, and destruction of closed session audio recordings. Since it came up, just for clarity, the audio recordings that would be destroyed are from August 27, 2012 through February 25, 2013. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Roll call.
Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Yes. Superintendent recommendations? There are none at this time. Superintendent reports?
With that, start off with the enrollment that was brought up earlier in the public comment. Currently, we're at 3,488 students. On June 10th, we're at 3,110 students. There is a difference. There are a number of factors. I did hear from a couple parents who did tell me that they were leaving due to what occurred over at Forest Glen. It was two emails and one personal conversation I had with a parent, but I also had two people that I ran into who said, you know, they're moving. So it's not a lot of data. But we also have an issue at Parkside, which feeds mainly Lincoln, but with Forest Glen, some of their preschool students, Parkside is going under a new management and requesting certain things from some of the residents that will be difficult for some of them to be able to meet. But there are a lot of factors when it comes to the enrollment. So we will continue to monitor it, continue to see why there's a variance, and we'll kind of go from there. Board members, please.
Just one comment, because I learned this last time through this cycle. Somebody told me this last time, so maybe they were wrong, but comparing the end of the year number to the beginning of the year number is a dangerous thing.
It is a dangerous thing.
That doesn't change the fact that
yep.
it, we're still, when you, that's why I like these two reports, and thank you for putting
You're
it
welcome.
In Excel.
You know, but it, there's still a drop-off, so I'm not saying
yeah.
There's no drop-off because of it, but it's, the magnitude's a little smaller. It's 82 students,
mm-hmm.
and you can see the two areas which you described. But I just wanted to...
I appreciate you bringing that up. This time of year, there's a lot of movement going on. I had an email from one of our principals saying, hey, we just received three more kindergartners. Where are we at? What do we need to do with that? So it does change quite a bit. In the next 20 to 30 days, we get really good numbers. So that information somebody gave you last year.
Yeah.
Probably a wise person.
Well, what's the number, the one that, I circled a couple things, but one under Forest Glen, self-contained, UC self-contained, that we had registered, I'm assuming these were registered, maybe they weren't, and that's the other thing, because we changed the mm-hmm. registration process to get more people registered early, we had, tighter numbers, but we have six, and then from a June date, it was 24. So did we shift some of those students out, or do they not need the self-contained classroom now?
No, none were shifted out. But again, I would be cautious with these early numbers, especially mm-hmm. in those types of programs, very specific programs, from the end of the year numbers to the beginning of the year numbers. But it's a good piece for us to continue to look at.
Because yeah. I know that some children, you know, as we assess at the end of the year, they may not need the MIP classroom anymore, so they mm-hmm. might be, you know, put into a regular classroom. So that's going to shift some of the numbers too. And then the other question I had was, we have in a couple of cases, you know, four sections where we have pretty consistent numbers, and then we have, but our lowest number is say at a 20, and the highest one is at 26 mm-hmm. or 27. So why the difference in some of those sections? Just depends on.
And we're still really working with our principals. Sitting down, talking with the principals, making sure that we're meeting those targets. And at times when we're a little bit over, we really want to see where is this gonna shake out.
Right.
Having those conversations. Is it an aide? Is it another teacher we add to the classroom? And that's the mm-hmm. conversation I was having with the principal today. Where are we at with this piece? How do we best support this classroom? For some of the schools, it is, do you have a classroom available to add that? You know, Churchill, we're struggling with just space of adding more classes to it.
So I want to bring it back.
Please.
Paul. So from this downtick in enrollment numbers, your principals have not given you, hey, we're noticing a trend because, and that's leading to demographics.
The only trend we have is the Parkside piece. That's the only one that we've heard consistently.
Okay.
I think that's I think the right focus is there a trend? And I thought there were maybe two. So the Parkside one is definitely one.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know how many kids from Parkside go. You know, I've heard as much as 100 kids from Parkside.
It's a large complex. I'll resend those numbers to you, but it is a large complex that houses a number of our students.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, from a facilities perspective, it would have a huge impact if things change significantly there. I don't know if there's anything we can do proactively to have a conversation with the new owner or try to understand where they're going, if there's any public domain information, because that could shift significantly a bunch of kids and may change our path. The other one seemed like a trend was the Forest Glen one with the pre
mm-hmm.
Early childhood.
Early childhood.
That was one I brought up.
Karen, anything that
is that could be a trend, and you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
I would look.
I would verify whether it's early childhood or the pre-K, because
yeah.
we're still placing kids from the waiting list in that, so those numbers.
We'll
see kind of a fluctuation.
Okay. Well, to me, those are the two trends that I think we need to see.
We'll monitor those two.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, I know there was a question that was brought up on how we across the district have kind of evenness, I'll use that term, right? And, you know, year to year, we don't, it's not like a Lego where you plug it in and it all fits every, you know, equally, which is where I see some of the, you know, some of the differences in some of the sections, too. Especially when we had to add a section. Do we have to hire a kindergarten teacher right at the end? So you add that section, so that might be a little bit lower, you know, but then as the principal, at least this happened, I think, 2 years ago, as the principal starts to see kids' personalities, because then this all goes back to all that data that principals work with and the teachers work with and the parents submit their information. So it's not as easy as plug and play. It's, is this child going to fit better here and here, and will this teacher, even though they have three more students, just be a better fit? You know, and I would rather, that's back to the whole issue of being able to align students as much as we can, being, you know, being, having as much evenness as possible, but, you know, a huge disparity, but I'd rather have a child in a classroom that maybe has, you know, is at the target, right, and those are targets, than in a classroom where they're not going to be a good fit in that classroom. At least that's what we heard from the principals a couple of years ago.
But to your point, right, Erica, that's building management, false principles, teams, don't.
Same size, yeah. Yep. With the
big box. Yeah.
Yep.
With the teachers, so.
So are we kind of left each year to look at May and August and based on that try to figure out what our needs are going to be next year?
We redid the registration process, so we have a better understanding of where our kids are at and how many students are at each grade level. And that proved to be very effective. We're not handing out as many teachers as we did at the beginning of last year, so that's been effective. I think it's important to go back to what Joe said. I think these early numbers, we'll bring them back to you in 2 weeks so you can see them again. So when we start solidifying and making sure the pre-K numbers, that's a big piece. As you looked at those trend pieces, that's a big number that's off. Yeah, so we really need to look at those, but I'll bring those back. I'll bring the enrollment report back to you in 2 weeks so you can see it with a few more weeks under its belt.
Okay. There may not be anything out of line here at all, because I'm looking at these kinds of numbers from a pre-K perspective, and I'm more used to college.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we've got very strict federal guidelines about how to count enrollments. But couldn't you be looking at pre-K and K and predicting for next year and look at those trends over the last, say, 5 years and see what your kindergarten enrollment was 5 years ago and how has that played out in fifth grade now? I mean, couldn't we be collecting that, or is that just...
We have all of that information, but they don't come to us in perfect packages every year. That's the hardest part with the kids. I mean...
Right.
You have some really different numbers and you have different movements for whatever reason. You have all of those pieces to us. I think if we'd wait a couple more weeks, I think it'll be interesting to see where the numbers start to shake out.
We have to do 100 day count for the state. Right?
Right. Yeah, because we have some very strict guidelines as well.
And Paul, again, to try to bring it back up.
Yeah.
Karen, don't you give us a 100 day report and you show us how the bubble of the classrooms go? And you did that last year.
Lori,
sorry. Right. Lori does?
Yep.
Okay. So we'll get something like that shows you.
So we have something a little more focused to guess on as opposed to...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
June to August.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
This shows us the trends.
Okay. Yeah.
So well, this doesn't really...
No.
I mean, this doesn't impact your ability to plan.
No.
I mean, this is
like we've done it.
You know, it's like a half teacher here, maybe. I mean, but it's not... This isn't like, oh, my God, I've got, you know, X amount. It's pretty predictable in that sense.
Okay.
And really, for the school that called it, it was new move-ins. Mm-hmm. Kids coming in and coming in, registering for the first time.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome. The next piece, I need to have the board give me some consensus around III conference. We've had two conversations on this. Mm-hmm. Two voices were absent, one at one meeting, one at another meeting, with different viewpoints on this topic. I really do need to. So Maureen and I have a greater sense of where we're at with III, so I would ask the board to give me...
What do you need to know?
I need to know, are we paying for hotels, and food for the board members. I mean, that's the piece where we were missing.
So does that assume you're paying for the fees of the conference?
Yes.
So you're paying for
that's
that?
That's what I understood to be the constant, that we were, the district was paying for the conference fees, board members, and that's where there was a difference in.
So you're only, asking about the travel piece.
Travel.
And hotel.
That's it. Food and
food,
and hotel.
Food, hotel, and travel.
Food, board, and travel. I think the room was included there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, room, board, and travel.
Yeah.
Was
room, board,
yeah. What's the past precedent?
That the district, for most of the board members, pick up the cost for the hotel the hotel stay and one.
I just want to clarify.
No, no, I appreciate it.
It didn't agree to pay for most. The policy was we will pay.
I appreciate that. That's a good yeah. clarification. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah, there's not. There's
yeah, there wasn't a most. Yeah, that five out of the seven get paid for.
Yeah, exactly.
It was
kickstart. It was kickstart.
Yeah. So
great.
Early. Yeah.
Yeah. Go
like
in your.
Yeah.
Right.
So it really is about what is the board looking for administration to do.
Eric and I are the ones who.
Yeah.
Hopefully, so.
Maybe we were each not at the other meeting.
Yes.
So, yes. So, I mean, that's where the discussion comes in. I mean, it past precedent to me, that does matter, but at some level, it also doesn't matter. It's what this board wants to do with its money, its budget. And I'm of the belief that the district should pay for us to attend if we choose to attend. And I would welcome everybody to attend. Last year, I attended. It's very good, especially for new board members. But also, I think for everyone here, because it reminds you of things, too. And you also get to meet a lot of other board members and learn from their experiences, and that's invaluable, because you don't find that walking down the street. Because they don't even know you're a board member, quite frankly. So how are you going to know they're a board member? But that said, to me, we are fortunate to be close enough to this conference. It's downtown. Several people work downtown. They can get in and out. I rather save the taxpayers money and not do that. As far as dinner and food, you know, I don't think that's necessary. I think it is necessary that we get together and we get to know each other and do whatever's allowed in the Open Meetings Act for us to do. But to do it, you know, to me, there's other times we get to spend at that conference in various different venues that allow us to get to know each other, allow us to get to know the vendors that are out there, the board members, and to go to these classes and to these presentations that are given. So that's kind of where I'm at. And I know there was a discussion by a community member, which was, I understand, you know, that, hey, not everyone can afford to perhaps, and you limit the possibility of somebody wanting to be a board member, because they can't afford the hotel room downtown, which is, quite frankly, going up in prices. Due to demand. And I understand that, but I, you know, taking the train or driving in and out is what people do in the Chicagoland area. It's a typical activity for your work. So I don't think it's a burden on to somebody. That's not how I see it. That's my perspective. Mm-hmm. So.
Point, counterpoint.
Yes.
this for me is just, I think it's just, it's pretty straightforward for me. And that is that, you know, this is a volunteer position for us. And one of the things that I think is important as a board, there's a couple things. It's professional development. We expect a lot of our teachers and our administrators in terms of continuously learning. And the conference is that one time that we have an opportunity to focus solely for those 2 days, 2.5 days, the stage or Sunday afternoon, to do that. And for our district at least, we've never taken advantage of going to a National Association School Board Conference, which is typically out of state and you know would incur certainly a lot more travel. And because of that, our board budget has stayed the same year on year. I think I had the numbers with me last time we talked about this, but it was around $6,000, and we didn't use all of the budget either. So I feel like this is the one a time where we have the opportunity to come together, do our own personal professional development, also take care of the required training that we need to do, which has changed over the last couple of years. And to Joe's point, I think we both agree on this. There is this is hard work. It's we've all worked on teams in our own individual workplaces, and you know that team dynamics change all the time. And so it's an opportunity for us to come together and have some of that time together as well. And so that Friday night dinner, which last year we adopted a new policy, which was to have, if a spouse came, they paid their own meal, and we paid for food for the administrator that was there as well as the board member only. So we did make that change, which I thought was fair, and that's fine.
Wasn't alcohol also funded by, it was just
alcohol
food?
Alcohol is not, we never pay for alcohol.
Right,
food.
So it was just food that was
just the food, exactly.
That's what
exactly. Yeah, just the food. This year, I want to go to a pre-conference on social media. We have Erica here, and I think it's important for us to have a better understanding of that. Managing the message in a big new media world. It's a half-day morning session on that Friday. There is a reality for, I think, most of us, and typically there will be on the board, where folks will be taking the personal time to do this out of their job. And I think that's a decision that you make, but it's also, I think, important work for the board that you do that. So that, I'm going to do differently this year. I've never done a pre-conference other than the very first year that I did it, which was a workshop. I think it's not unreasonable to once a year pay for our registration, an appropriate pre-conference if we choose it, one night hotel and food for dinner. That's all.
Anybody else?
To follow our own rules, ditto.
Ditto to Erica. Just want to make sure I'm getting right. Dittos.
Yeah.
So keep it moving.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Anybody else?
I'm in the middle, and that's because I'm missing a piece of information. We have a $6,000 budget for this. Could we do something like it covers the conference fee for all of us, and then if there's something less than $6,000?
Oh.
Then that could go towards meals or housing if needed.
Mm-hmm. I forgot the sheet that I had for the total cost for last year.
I just looked. It looks like it's $400 for the registration, $430. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. You might certainly have more depth on this than I do, Marty.
So you're saying spend up to the budget.
Yeah, we don't get that close though.
We don't get that close, so we're talking about how much do we want to try to save. Is that
personally, I'd like to take the budget from $6,000 down. I mean, mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. So I don't want to.
Well, I think it would help if I knew how much money we're talking about.
Totally understand. By the way, I have a clarification. I am for pre-conferences.
Right, and
lodging was $1,600.
That would cost one person, or
no? For whatever board members,
for the five or six board members,
either $500 or $1,600.
Yes.
Not everybody used. That
no,
right.
That's where I got the most thing. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thanks.
What was the food?
The food was $313.
So $2,000 for lodging, okay. The board members, and feeding them. Is that?
Mm-hmm. And nothing for travel. Yeah. There's no one really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You probably don't allow
that. True.
You know, I think the meal's important. I think the district should sponsor the meal. You know, in terms of the hotel, I guess, you know, we have a board policy that addresses travel. I think it's supposed to be for administrators and teachers, I think, you know, we should apply that for the board members.
Does the board policy on travel, it doesn't have a distance, right? It just says if you choose to stay in a hotel and it's approved, it's paid for, right?
Well, I thought there was a...
No.
Well, that is aligned to, you know, the professional...
Well, it has to get approved.
someone has to say yes, that distance justifies that you get a hotel room.
Okay.
Or if you have a 6 a.m. meeting or, you know, whatever.
Okay.
Dean?
I have a bigger problem using my vacation than I do paying for my hotel room. And that's just a deal that I have to do, and I knew when I got on the board that I'd be using 3 or 4 or 5 days a year of my vacation for this. To tell you the truth, I think it is absolutely reasonable to have the hotel and the meals charged, and I also think I don't want to do that. And the reason is that it's become a sticking point with the public that this is some sort of measurement of whether you're fiscally responsible or not. I don't believe it's true. I believe it's a sticking point. It's $1,600. We all give up our vacation time. We all give up our family time. And you spend a lot of hours down there doing this, and it is really worthwhile. It is really worthwhile to go to these conferences. All of these trainings that I've been to, you learn things, you meet other board members who can teach you things, and they're great conversations. It's just that for the noise it creates, it just isn't worth it to me. So I would rather pay for it myself. I think that the registration should be paid for by the district, because I don't think it should cost me money to go to this. So they can pay for the registration. I can take the train back and forth. If I like to stay down there because I can afford to stay down there, then I do. I know that's not fair to everybody who can't stay down there, but it just is a way to say, okay, great, we hear you. We're going to make this symbolic gesture, because I think that's all it is. I really don't think it's material. I think it's ridiculous that we spend this amount of time in a board meeting talking about this, but it's important to some people. So if it's going to be important to them and we're going to spend this kind of time talking about it, then I'd say, well, why don't we just hop on with Joe and say, yeah, let's do that. So that's my 2 cents. I think so. It's ridiculous.
Sounds like you have a majority that say to pay for the hotel and the food. And if you elect not to, then you don't, I guess.
Yeah.
You can always elect not to.
That's what Joe did last year. Joe elected not to last year, and I'll be doing that this year.
Comments from you?
You know, I you don't want to hear my comments about the III conference, but in terms of paying for the, you know, I think it's, you know, it's standard policy to pay for anybody that, you know, takes a hotel and dinner. That's just a common practice in most business worlds. I don't think Chicago, you know, I think Joe said it, I don't think Chicago is a place where we have to travel to and spend a hotel. It's close enough. I do it enough. I don't know who else does it, but to me, that wouldn't, you know, if someone on my project that lived in Chicago did that, I would deny the expense, right? So taking the rule of you can, you know, if it's approved, then yeah, they'll pay for it. So we should, you know, if there's a III conference in Colorado and we have to go, you know, we should, our hotel should be paid for, our food should be paid for. You know, that's a higher cost, and I can't drive back to Chicago. But Chicago to me is just, it's not that hard. There's trains, there's cars. You know, I could see you paying for my travel down there. I could see you paying for my parking if I drive and not stay in a hotel. While I think the policy is pay for a faculty or administrator, should be the same as for us, pay for it if it's approved, I personally wouldn't approve this one just because it's, you know, it's 26 miles and I can handle it. So
okay.
I would probably, on the III specific, lean to where Joe is, and I'm not paying it.
Okay.
Dina, so. But so I think you have a...
I don't think that. I think Catherine, I need to...
She's right in the middle.
She's right in the middle. I mean, that
kind of consensus. I think requesting the district to pay for the registration is appropriate and professional. And that's a way to say that you do value our time that we're volunteering to go and spend the time. I would be the person to drive home and not submit an expense report for a hotel. I don't think that should preclude another board member if they really feel like the hotel needs to be paid. I don't need to quibble about that. And I'm with Dean. I don't think this is enough money to really convey the complexion of this board or our priorities. It's really in our entire budget, and all the things that I think are coming ahead of us this year, I think it's a very small question.
So would you
all right.
I don't know that you have direction.
I don't feel like I have consensus.
I think Paul still needs direction.
Well, yeah. Would you be in support of the current policy that says that the hotel room and the dinner would be paid for? Or
yes, I'm in favor of that policy if that allows each board member
to go.
Decide whether they would actually ask to have that money reimbursed.
Okay. So,
So
4-3.
Yeah, I have consensus to move forward with current practices, and that does not preclude a board member from saying, you know what, I'll pick up my tab.
Or if a board member can negotiate a good rate for everybody, pass that.
Well, we get that negotiated through the conference.
So. Oh, it isn't it?
Oh, the rack rate that's lower.
It's probably not a good rate, though, in terms of what you had in mind for good. I don't know.
Well, it's not $49.
All right. Okay. My piece is done.
Huh?
My piece is done.
You're done. Okay, board reports.
Wasn't there administrative?
There was I'm looking right at it. Sorry. No. That was a pretty important one. Sorry. So under administrator and teacher salary and benefit report, I made it available to the board members. It will be available on our website tomorrow to the public, pursuant to school and state law that these pieces are posted and the board is aware of these reports that are out there. And they will be submitted to ISBE prior to October 1st. So now I'm done.
Okay.
So enthralled with the other conversation.
Board reports, Erica.
Well, I just want to say that where to find it, because this question came up a couple weeks ago about the transparency project, which is a transparency project that was started by the Illinois Policy Institute. So I did a screenshot of the of our website for that. And the idea behind it is that we followed Illinois Policy Institute's approach, so that there was consistency from district to district as much as possible on how you found certain information. Mm-hmm. So this particular report, when it gets posted tomorrow or whatever, is going to be item 7. It's always under salary and benefits, and it's the first click on there. So I just want to clarify. There's a lot of great information out here. I know that we go on a lot, but the idea behind it was to create continuity so that if you're looking at 87 or 89 or 50, or whatever, we're getting the same stuff. So this will be posted there.
Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm done.
John, why don't you talk about the education roundtable that we went to with Rossi, Congressman Rossi?
Well, I was going to allow everyone to do their board reports and then I was just going to follow protocols. Board reports? I know you have an article.
I'm just going to do that under other. I'll pass around. But one quick report, although I don't have the minutes because the meeting was just this last Thursday. But I just wanted to report that Team 21 is back meeting, and we had a meeting on September 4th. I wasn't able to be there because I was out of town, but I did send notes to Karen and Kelly King, her co-chair, to the meeting itself. And our monthly meetings are planned out now. October 4th is the next one through June 4th. There was a book that was decided that we would read as a book review for the team. And so did those get distributed, Karen?
We're still waiting on it. So,
So we're going to be doing that. And the book is titled Disrupting Class. And it's this idea of, you know, building in differentiation and looking at how kids learn differently, as I recall the lead of the book. But the meetings are in place. We have some new members come on board. And some of our minutes from the June 5th meeting was also around looking where Team 21 needed representation. So there was going to be a follow-up on that to see outreach for our different constituencies to get more people involved where we had openings. But it's full house, new people on board, and I'll have more information as we go into the next cycle of this, too. One quick thing on that. There was a book that I read this summer, and I'm happy to share it with you. And I picked it up just because I thought the title was interesting, but it's called How Children Succeed. And the author's name is Paul Tuft. but it really reinforces evolution of your curriculum, and it ties into this education roundtable that John was at with me and Dean was too, with Congressman Roscom, around innovation in the classroom. And so I just found it really interesting, and I'm happy to do a little book share with anybody that wants to take a look at it. But we will update you on Team 21. We're continuing with issues around innovation, using models to determine where we're looking at achievement gap, et cetera, to give that feedback up to Paul and through CIT and then up to Paul. And that's on the agenda for October.
Terrific. Any other board reports?
I attended the same thing with you, Roscom, so I'll let you talk about that. But I attended the internet training session, the internet safety session by Officer Bean. A lot of people showed up for it. It was really well received. I thought things like that added a lot of value to mentors on that.
Absolutely. Did we tape that, or is that part of the contract? Or I thought it would have been good to put that up on YouTube for parents.
Yeah, it's his intellectual
so that's part
properties.
Of the contract.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure.
Yeah, no.
Somebody asked
that.
Yeah, like,
well, we do have a sheet with some information. And
the presentation itself was that's his too, right? That's
yes.
Okay. Sorry. Anybody else?
Question. I'm trying to find it real quick.
Sure, please.
Originally, we had three items on finance. One of them we discussed at the full board meeting. That was the bid results from Jack. Bob talked about the year end budget. There'll be more discussion at our next meeting, and the reimbursement for a portion of the Hadley courtyard. So.
Yeah.
We got at least $45,000 as a check back to us from the state of Illinois.
Yeah, that's great.
Based on a grant that Sandy Pijos had started like 2 years ago.
5 years
ago.
Question on. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, John.
No, I was just going to. On the end year results, is there a quick one-liner? Did we $600,000 under? It sounds like we had more revenue come in than expected, and
that's on a cash basis. The auditors are in, and they'll be accruing that back to the 14-15 school year.
Mm-hmm.
13-14.
You're right. On a cash basis,
yeah.
Right.
I would say the one line is I'm going to speak up here. 1-1.5% in budget.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's
pretty good. More information with the auditors when they finish up the game. I also attended the Pep Foundation. So I know they're waiting to talk to Paul. So, and then Erica is going to join me on the Pep board. So.
All right.
I'll be at the Hadley PTA tomorrow, so I'll have a report next time for that.
Cool. Look forward to it. Anybody else? You've heard about the Pete Roscom, Erica, and Dean, and I went. And it was basically an hour with Pete. He wanted to get an understanding of what board members were thinking, what were we hearing from our constituents, what were some of the key issues and challenges that we were facing. As you can imagine, there were different opinions. On both sides of each issue,
yeah.
But we were able to talk about a lot of good things in terms of what's happening in Springfield, where's the certainty around that so that we can plan more appropriately. What are some of the trends that they're seeing? What's happening in Washington, and then. From a District 41 perspective, we talked about our learner characteristics and how we position those as game changers and a little more than just our standard, education. And he found that interesting, and following up with him around that. So I thought that was a good plug for the district. And you guys want to add anything more about that? Or
I think
And the only other thing I would add is, John, I had a chance to talk, to kind of frame for Congressman Roscoe, you know, the idea of the learner characteristics as part of whole learning. And one thing that you said I thought was really important, it was this connection to world of work beyond. So we're prepping our kids through elementary, through middle school, especially to high school. But then what's beyond that? And that's this idea of this. We can't have a lack of innovation in the classroom. I mean, there's got to be that piece in order to be attending to the needs that business is telling us that they need. And I know we always say this, but they're third graders or fifth graders. But it's an iterative process. And so the more we pay attention to that, the more they get it. So Congressman Roscoe, he loved those. I'm glad you didn't follow up. I know we told Anna that we would get those to him. But I say let's get us on the map. And I think those are really, hugely innovative addition to the district and really made a big difference because teachers have embedded those and really worked with them. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
There was an article in the journal today that talked about that exactly. Mm-hmm. And so in your commentary, if you want to send a link to the journal, talks about that K through 12 learning characteristics.
Yeah.
Business leaders are saying that has to change.
Right. Yeah. So that was very positive. And then
how many people showed up?
There were probably 30.
Yeah, 30 people. And he said it's ongoing, right?
Yeah, he's going
to continue.
Yeah, he's going
to
continue.
As we get invitations, he's going to go.
Yeah.
And he had mentioned a couple times that he was a proud graduate of D41 and that he went to Franklin and Hadley. So he was telling people there that.
And then attended CIT where we took our model that you guys all received just really took different pieces of the model and went through it and talked about how it applies, what's important. I mean, it was just a very good conversation around the model. And as usual, the learner characteristics surfaced, at least in my group. And we talked about PBL and some other elements of it, so that was a very good session. And Karen, hopefully you got something out of it. Of course, yes. That's it for me. I attended the policeman thing, too. Any other? Are we done with the board reports? Okay, upcoming meeting, September 22nd, 2014, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office. October 14, 2014, regular board meeting, 7:30, Central Services Office. October 23rd, 2014, special meeting, 6:30 p.m., Central Services Office. What is the...
Can I have a... I'd like to make a comment on this. Because there's circulating, there was an invitation to a workshop on October 6th. Mm-hmm. The one board member who couldn't make the time allocated.
And can I clarify, the starting time of that was what, 7:30?
It was 7.
7.
7. 7.
Yeah. But it's not on here, so...
No.
The one thing, when we were requested to bring our schedules, so I brought mine, not knowing that we were going to get invited to a meeting, but unfortunately I can't make that timing. My goal would be, as a team, to sit down and John used the team word before, one of your discussion items, and look at, I know we all have a lot of schedules, and to me, what I want to do, and I know one person not being there that's happened before, that's unfortunate that person couldn't be there, and it's unfortunate that I won't be able to be there either. But I think with anything, you want to take one last shot to see if everybody can get together, and I think that's what the goal of us bringing our schedules was. I mean, I think that's why it was asked, and I think you asked it all, so I wanted to follow through with that. And so that's my request here. But what I'd like to do is hopefully make it easy for you guys, if you could, I don't know what everybody's scheduled, but still do it on that date, but actually make it later. I actually thought it started at 7:30.
See, I love that. I'm in.
You might not like it when I... Well, okay.
Wait, 9 o'clock?
8:30 was going to be my request because my conflict... I should be able to be here by 8:25, but I forget.
Yeah, I mean, if it allows you to participate, which is, why I called you today, if it allows you to participate, I think we ought to do it, because you know, I agree everyone should be there, but you just don't want to push this too far down because Paul needs some decisions. So 8:30 would be.
Well, I would be 35 minutes here for me.
We're good.
I was offering.
Wow, you should wait. Let him finish. Let him finish.
What was he offering?
To bring snacks.
Time if we start at
8:30. Huh?
Say it again.
What's concluding time if we start at 8:30?
1:30.
Yeah, I would hope that it would be.
I'm not going to be here at that point. I might be in the room, but I won't be
around.
What if we set this up to be a 2.5 hour meeting? 7 to 9:30 originally.
Yes.
So yeah, it was.
Can we do it in 2 hours?
Yeah, I think you could do it in 2 hours.
Stop at 10:30.
You can do 8:30 to 10:30,
and then stop.
8:30 to 10:30.
Well,
yes, I can do 8:30 to 10:30.
So wait, can we hear about his snacks?
I'm not awake yet.
You're okay, no matter what they are.
Not a safe term of snacks.
All right.
Well, I appreciate that, everyone.
No, Joe, thanks for making that day work, because I know you had another commitment.
Yeah, it's so really easy to have everybody
here. Okay, thank you.
All right, we're done with that. Okay, other matters.
Just quickly, I just want to pass this article out, because it ties into something we've been talking about, and that we're going to have Paul's update at our next board meeting. And it's titled "How School Boards Influence Student Achievement," and I'll send the PDF to you, Maureen, so that you can post it. Because I think it's a really good article, and it really is focusing around a lot of what we're talking about, which is the importance of community building, collaboration, connections, child advocacy, curriculum, that type of thing. The themes involved. So, a good article. And then I just want to pass this Kleenex down to Paul.
appreciate it.
How the only doing? Boy went off to college on yes. Friday, and we yeah. know as we send kids off to college, anybody in the room and those of us who will then get more,
yeah.
it is a life changer, and the house is all of a sudden much quieter. John, you know that with Mom gone, and makes a big
difference. You said that pretty well.
I know, because most people don't. I appreciate it. It is different without your son rambling around the room and then coming in and seeing what's in the refrigerator at all hours of the night. Limited communication over the weekend, but the one was, hey, where you at? I'm at Buffalo Wild Wing. Hey, where you at now? Hey, I'm at McDonald's. Hey, where am I? What are you doing? That's all you're doing. So he is out there.
Last thing I want to do is I would encourage all board members, even if you don't have a home school like I don't anymore, but I have an alumni school, Churchill, is to be a member of the PTA. Some of you have children in school, so you're already family members, but I just think it just shows great support. It costs $12, and it's a practice I've tried to do over the last few years without anybody in 41. So pick a school, go online, join, and just shows great support from the board for what they're doing.
Okay. Any other matters? Catherine, I know you've got a bunch of them.
Well, you know, I'm just take two for tonight, okay?
Okay.
thanks, John. As far as I can remember, it was April when the village sealed a sister city relationship with a town in France. I don't know if anyone here has been involved at all with the concept and then carrying it out, and I don't know what's planned for the village specifically to kind of carry out and put some flesh on this idea. But I know in past situations that I've been involved in, schools have taken on a role in this partnership with students in the other country. And with the internet, what it is, I mean, it's not unthinkable that we could have students chatting, even posting things that they share on a website, and I mean with teacher guidance and in conformance with our policies for educational purposes. So I just wanted to throw out, if people have thoughts, it's something that I think could be easily overlooked, and I don't think we should overlook it. I think we should be proactive and say, here are some ways that we can really capitalize on the educational benefits of this partnership. And I'm not giving you a to-do list. I just wanted to say, do other people like this idea? You want to put me on talking to village people and seeing what ideas they have? I mean, I don't mind doing some more research, but I thought...
Aren't the village people dead?
Those people will never die, John.
to go.
I was going to go there too.
You know, maybe I should be more specific.
Are you thinking internationally though, specifically, or?
Well, the sister city relationship is already settled, and it is international. It's with the town in France.
No, I understand, but is that what you're thinking with this goal?
That's what I'm thinking about in terms of the sister city. We should look for.
I think it's. You know, a lot of cities have this program, so it's up to how might we participate.
Right.
Didn't we have something like, Karen, I don't know, maybe, I can't remember. Did one of the teams in PBL or coaches go cross-country or engage students in another country?
Some of our teachers have done, like, little projects with kind of, like, sister schools and that.
Yeah.
But I think what Catherine's suggesting is a little bit bigger, and PBL would be a good link to that.
And it may not be that I'm suggesting anything big. It may need to start small and then it could grow over time. I just wanted to think about getting started with something that's meaningful.
Within the sister city we have.
Right.
I think finding out more information from the village about it would be great. And it's, you know, we're always talking about being able to have some interdependence with one another and pick up on what each other is doing. I think it's great to know what's out there.
So when we put that mission statement up, I'll say it again, the whole global piece.
Yeah.
You know, the whole concept there is that we would start using technology and maybe check in with a classroom in another country once a week, once a month, you know, kind of have a buddy type of thing.
I think our time difference, I think we could, we could probably manage it.
Yeah. But I mean, that, you know, that whole concept of linking with other countries and cultures and all that was part of the concept and using technology to do that. So I personally like the idea. Just from a priority perspective, you know, it kind of goes back to that whole priority discussion with PBL and Think Tank and all that. You know, is this another dimension? Maybe it could be limited to just the foreign language group that we're doing, but that's Spanish, but, you know, that's okay.
Well, you know, one thing that I think might help is to get some ideas, ground stuff from our teaching staff.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe we just plant the seed as the board and see where they feel that they can make it useful and, you know, encourage them to run with it. I don't know.
I mean, I love the idea. I just don't know, Paul, if you, you know,
I would have to know a lot.
Is there time,
lot more?
Is there time for staff or teachers?
Right now,
yeah.
I can't ask Karen.
I can work.
You can work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
One of the issues you have with checking in with the classrooms, though, is the time differential.
Mm-hmm.
I have talked to some teachers on this and some of the things that they're doing. You know, like there was some kindergarten class that someone to Kansas City Zoom last year, but you're on the same time zone, so it's very helpful. But if you're 6 hours different, 9 o'clock here, 3 o'clock there,
right.
I don't know when their school could go later in Europe.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So there's a way to do it, but there is constraints to where what we're doing each day too.
Well, it might be something as simple as what used to be pen pals, and you know, however that played out in 2014.
Yeah. Email pals or whatever.
Okay, so that's one of my ideas, and I guess I'm hearing I can get something a little more concrete.
With Eric, yeah.
Okay. The other one is more local. I think you all probably remember that I worked at COD for quite a while, and I'm still affiliated there. I am wondering if we have a possibility of some kind of partnership with them, and I don't know if there's anything discussed when you had the partnership breakfast. You said somebody from COD was there. They train students in early childhood education, and obviously we employ people in that area. We've got early childhood education going on in some of our programs, as well as the fact that District 41 students will be college students in, you know, a short 5 years by the time they leave Hadley, and perhaps they need to see some things that are going on at COD, or in some we know that they're very prepared for college-level education, and we can show them that locally. Again, I don't have a firm plan. I wanted to see if this was something that people felt like was worth pursuing, and, you know, get your thoughts on it.
I'm all for it. I think they have facilities there that are state-of-the-art in some areas, and we have facility issues. So if there's some way to tie in, it makes sense to me.
I'm for both of those ideas. But I think we have a lot of I think we have a lot of heavy lifting that we would have to do, i.e. you would have to do. And we would, you know, it would have to be a, not because we were against it, but it would be have to be a presentation to Paul and his team to say, this is what my concept is, these are the steps that I think we would take, here's some timelines, this is how I think we could, how I think you guys could move it forward, because they have a school to run right now, you know, and they got programs to run and teachers to teach, and both ideas are really good, and you know, anything I can do to help you do that, but I think we'd have to move a lot of large bricks and a lot of medium bricks. So when we bring it to Paul and his administration that says, here's my idea, here's how I think it could be executed, here are the partners and people that I need, here are the people in both these countries and cities and locally in CUNY, you probably have a lot of those contacts. So they can almost take that project plan and create detailed design requirements to say, okay, got it. Now I know exactly what you're doing, and I can do this by next year, or they say this. So totally support. I don't want to discount either of those ideas, but I support you on all of them, but I think we have to do a lot of heavy lifting before we even get our teachers engaged.
Well, that's what concerns me again. Love the idea, and you know, that's what I said in email, right? I mean, it's priority. Like, you're on the policy committee. We should have an internet policy.
Right.
We have
my third point here.
Yeah, I mean, but that's where the bandwidth, to me, because it's a priority, needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have this infinite bandwidth, then
stop.
You know, have the time to do that, that's great,
infinite
right?
Bandwidth.
We need, because we need a more concrete proposal so we can react to it. But there are things that we've laid out that are priorities that we just need to make sure get done as well as.
Yeah. I was going to say, maybe because I think everybody likes the plan, maybe the idea is not to come up with another new project here, but see if there's some way, because I think this is where you're going with it. You know, and you mentioned it in our mission. It's global, you know, that we want to be more active in a global society. Maybe there's a way to tie some of this stuff in to aid our teachers
right.
in those areas where they're trying to do things
yeah,
and to get their input to be able to do that mm-hmm. rather than come up with something separate. To say, hey, if you're working on this, here's a great way to get a global contact. And if you want to, if you were already trying to build this into your curriculum somewhere, we could do this. And then as far as COD goes, that could be a long haul. But you know,
it could be.
To not have a relationship with them and be talking back and forth is not. We should leverage anything we can get out
right.
of them.
And I think that's the first part of it. That yes, maybe not. You don't need as much bandwidth. It's just the open line of communication. Start brainstorming. I think having that meeting, we are trying to engage people in our community. They are.
Yeah, and we Karen and team PBL coaches held a business partner breakfast
mm-hmm.
Where COD was well attended and was very excited about partnerships. Three individuals attended from COD, but because I'm so great with names, yeah. but I know. They were there. They were very excited about it and wanting to engage more with us. So I think there's a nice doorway there for us to enter.
Yeah, and Catherine, I guess, it, you know, if I were, and I don't know how COD works, but there's this whole concept of STEAM, of
mm-hmm.
business partnerships to fund some of the activities, right? To me, that could be
yeah.
a place to focus in on. Goes back to bandwidth. If I were trying to invest in a relationship with COD, it would be probably in the STEAM area. But I don't know if it's more important for us to take that energy and do more with, you know, our high schools, for example, and coordinate that. That might be more of a, you know, bottom line value add for us. So.
Mm-hmm. Those are good thoughts. Well, thanks. I'm not really bringing up an item about policy committee, except that it's my understanding that we will be working out a schedule of what will be addressed and reviewed this year. And for all of you on the board, if you've got input on the policies that need the most attention, I hope I'm speaking for you too, Dean.
Yeah.
You know, we need your input on that so we can address the most urgent needs first.
A quick FYI, we all got an alert today about the state of Illinois tightening down on some of the bullying policies. So I'm sure that's going to come through press, but it's from what I read in it, we did that. I think it was just a year ago, right?
Yeah.
But the piece that the state of Illinois is looking at is including bullying that happens outside of a school district, and so the ramification, which is huge, and that's a little bit of a game changer in terms of everybody's policy. So I look at that. It came, just came in today, and I looked at it really quickly.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Anything else? Close out this other matters. Okay, let's go to our public participation. I guess let's get our slide up as we're still learning this process. This is what we call the end of the... This is our public participation end of meeting. Please respect each other. 3 minutes, so Mike, you'll have the clock going. Let's try not to repeat what's previously been said. If you've got a speaker for a group, that would be appreciated. Maureen, you'll capture anything. Okay, does anybody want to address the board at this time? Mr. Cooper.
Okay, real quickly here. Hopefully this will have a little bit of value. Unlike the previous late night public participation. I've been coming here for a number of years. I'm probably as qualified as anybody to talk about public participation because I've probably been as much as anybody else does. There's been ebb and flow since I've been coming here in terms of the number of people that show up. Sometimes the room's full. Most of the time the room isn't. Sometimes the room is empty. And I'm the only one of the ones who does work for the district. I think to myself, if it's not broken, don't fix it. The time frame that it takes at the end of the evening to make the couple comments that, you know, a handful of us made, I don't think really should change. If anything, I do the effort tightening up meetings. I brought this up during the summer. Tonight it wasn't so bad, but board reports. To me, board reports are, this is a spectator here, a paying spectator. They don't worry to me. They aren't, they're a part of the business from the outside. I don't see what a board report really, we can limit them. My point over the summer was a minute per person for 7 people up there. I think that's plenty of time frame. Okay. As far as writing what we want to say in public participation, they hand it in. And we're sitting here in a meeting, we're not at a desk. I can barely read my scribble. You're certainly not going to be able to read it if I turn it into you. I think that's a bad idea. My other subject matter was on the Triple I conference. The reason it's become an issue over the was two or 3 years ago, the district embarrassed its stakeholders. We got listed in the newspaper because we spent almost $10,000 one year and we had a $2,300 dinner. It's insane. What I don't understand, so I guess my point is this, what you guys did tonight, that's fine. Whoever wants to go ahead and not pay for it, great. Whoever wants it, whoever feels that they should be able to go ahead and get that, that's fine too. That'll probably change over time as the board members change out. What I don't understand are a couple of things. One is, the point was brought up about, well, if it's in the budget, well, most of us are in the private sector. The point was brought up tonight by a public sector person. The budget is my money, the budget is everybody's money out here. Nobody has any business talking about that like it's fund money. It's not fund money. It's money that we have paid into this district, and it's being used not necessarily exactly as we would like. So let's not talk about budget yet. You know, we can spend up to a certain amount. It's still our money. And one question I've got is, I've never understood this. We generally have 3 meals a day, everyone. Okay, great. So why is it when someone goes on a trip for a school district that the taxpayers have to pay for that person's lunch and or dinner? I never got that. You're not going to eat that night if you're at home? Of course you're going to eat. So why should we fund it?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay? I'm not getting all the numbers up there. But I believe that with my heart. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Stephanie Clark. I'll try to be concise. I know Mr. Cooper said a couple of things. I said it. Like him, I feel like maybe this adds no value, and this may be one of the last sentences at the end of the meeting, but I hope you listen. I just wanted to make a couple points that I hope you consider before you take into account Mr. Elder's recommendation. I'm still trying to understand why you're looking to eliminate public participation at the end of the meeting. Really, the only 2 reasons I heard were
that it's because of the length of the meeting, and I think that was kind of disproved. I don't think that it adds very much time to the end of the meeting. And then the other part was that there isn't any value in what it says at the end of the meeting. And I'm going to repeat myself. I said this in the middle of my comment, but I do think it is important because it gives people a chance to comment after all the discussion and everything is said during the meeting. They may not want to speak at the beginning because they want to wait until the end to hear what is said. And I do think that happens. It's called other public bodies in Glen Ellyn are operating this way. I don't know why we would want to do it different. I know there's times that people can be annoying. Maybe they come to the meeting and speak at the end because they're not happy about the decisions you make. But it doesn't always happen that way. I want you to just listen to them for a few minutes. I know Dr. Gordon and Erica are working really hard to build trust with the community, reach out to the community, and I feel like to eliminate this just because of the reasons I've heard is just sending a message that community involvement isn't that important at the meetings. Listening sessions are not school board meetings. Board members are not required to be there. If you don't actually hear all the discussion that's actually occurring, the ones that I send to your rotating round tables, so you only hear the summary at the end. So you can't necessarily hear directly from a person. And a person speaking at a board meeting is actually a matter of public record. It's in a minute, it's on audio, that does not happen at listening sessions, and somebody may want to make a comment after what happens during the meeting and make it a matter of public record, and they don't want to wait 2 weeks until the next board meeting to say it. It's no longer timely. There's no minutes from listening sessions, I already said that. I know the listening sessions from this past spring, I've never seen any notes, information published about that. We've had updates in meetings, and I'm not criticizing this, I'm just mentioning. It's not necessary. It's not the same format as the one. And I know a lot of the people that talk here have also attended listening sessions. We're not here saying we represent the community. We're just representing our concerns, and it's not our fault that other people don't choose to come to these meetings as well. So it doesn't seem right to just eliminate public participation from some of the people.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else?
I wanted to touch quickly on enrollment and then also on the public participation. A large part of the decision to move to Glen Ellyn for my family was education for our children. And when I moved here, I had several parents tell me that the district had significant shortcomings with that was greater than I thought, or as I was making it out to be, so I moved. And I thought they had no idea what they got here because they don't know where I came from or what I was dealing with in another school district. And I still believe this is a great school district. I think there's so many great things about what you're doing here. Although I do understand their frustrations now in a way that I never did before. And there is a lot of discord going on, and I just feel like it's not really being addressed. And it goes in part and parcel why people don't come and tell me that it doesn't matter if they come. And then you also have a lot of people that just don't have the ability to be here in the evening. So there are a lot of families that are going to Wheaton Christian, Wheaton Montessori, St. James, and I have five alone within one block of where I'm at, and that's a lot for a school district that has great scores. Because we're paying a lot in taxes, and for them to be paying for private school additionally, you have to ask why. So the percentage drop that happened in Forest Glen and also in Lincoln, I mean, I think we should be taking very close look at that and watching it. I think there are a lot of things involved. And it's really not the technology thing so much as the education decisions that were made over the last couple of years upset a lot of people. Okay, as far as the public participation, there were a lot of great points brought up. You know, Catherine said she likes to get the emails, and I just want to thank Catherine and Erica and Dean for responses to my emails and John for some phone calls because actually a lot of times there is absolutely no response, and I've heard from other parents they get no response whatsoever. And the auto email, I know that you implemented, that's also kind of not my
much of a feeling. So thank you to Catherine. I've heard some good responses that you've made personal outreaches regardless of the canned email. And I think that it is important to have a public participation, and I'm sorry that you guys don't feel like, or some of you don't feel like you're getting any value out of the comments that are made from the public. I do feel like sometimes it's going into a black hole.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? That's it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, forgot the key point of if you would televise it, you could televise it and then allow people to do tweets and their questions.
Okay, adjourn to closed session. There's no need to adjourn to closed session, correct? Nothing's happening in this room. All right. So may I have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
At the September 8th meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Meeting's adjourned.